Eric Friedrichsen, biologist with NOAA.
Ben Osmond, fish biologist, Pondville Dam.
Yeah, this is the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I think I'm a fish and wildlife biologist, but I'm mostly just a personnel manager.
Josh Hollowatz, Washington Fish and Wildlife. I'm a fisheries biologist. I work for Pat.
Pat Frazier, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I'm the regional fish program manager for Southwest Washington.
I didn't recognize you up there, Pat.
We're both getting old, Dave. And I oversee all fish management activities, which includes population monitoring, fishing seasons, and hatchery operations.
Bob Cordy, fish biologist at Dallas Dam.
Dave Bender, hydrologist with Fish Pass Service.
Scott Benton, fish and wildlife administrator.
Is that important or something?
It's amazing. It's like, oh, it's your title.
That's a pretty good title.
Yeah. Administrator.
Seat of business.
Secretary.
The administrator.
Yeah, there's, you can't be administrator.
Sean Tackley, fish biologist with the Portland District Corps of Engineers.
Dennis Schwartz, fish bio for Portland District.
Tammy Mackey, assistant to Burn, Portland District.
Slave.
David Mills, fish biologist with memory problems, Fish and Wildlife Service.
Good to have you here, Dave. I mean,
what was your name again?
Oh, yeah, what's your name again?
Fred.
Who do you work for?
Who's your boss?
Who's my boss?
Fred who?
I forgot about that.
That's good. Tim Dykstra, Walla Walla District fish biologist.
And in the back of the room is
Ed Meyer, Fish Pass Engineer, National Marine Fisheries
Service. The engineer in the house.
Nathan Sorich, fish biologist, Portland. Robert Stancil, fish biologist, Fisheries Program, Portland.
All right, well, thanks. We're missing a couple people.
There's Bill.
Yep, Bowser, fish biologist.
Got to be in front of me or else you don't get recognized.
I would love to see.
His peripheral
vision. And who do we have on the phone?
Throwing stuff at you.
Keep using that one.
I've done that before.
There were four people.
So, who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Anybody?
This is Rick Krueger.
Rick!
Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Where are you?
Hello.
Hello.
I guess you're on the road.
I'm trying to finish.
Shut up.
Your title.
Yeah. Well, my title is Fish Passage Mitigation Biologist, but I started out life as an aquatic ecologist / fish physiologist.
Didn't work out.
That's too much information.
Didn't work at that, so we tried
something. That's right.
Thanks for calling in, Rick. Anybody else?
Burn out for it.
And I got it. Thank you. Appreciate
Chris
it.
Chris Moody, fish biologist, Walla Walla.
Natalie Richards, project manager, Corps.
Anybody else?
It's three.
Okay.
I think we just
called it. We're
the fourth one. Great. All right, well, anybody need an agenda? Hopefully you printed out what you wanted, reviewed it.
As I've said before, Bert, we all bring our own agendas.
Yes, I know you do.
So, Bert.
Yes, sir.
Bert, I have a request. At some point today, I expect the proposed change in block design that John Day is going to come up.
That's not a FPOM agenda item.
Okay. But should it, that's what I'm here for today. Otherwise, I wouldn't be calling in. But,
really? But you're part of FPOM. You should be here anyway.
He's on his way to California.
Should, I'm on vacation.
He's on annual leave.
You're on annual leave. Well, I don't know. Was that a TMT issue? Was it discussed at TMT yesterday?
Yeah, it is. But they're wanting a decision by tomorrow, and I'm not sure what forum there's going to be for discussing it.
I haven't heard of it coming to FPOM. I guess you guys know. What's the next step as far as that?
So Rick and I spoke on the phone briefly this morning, and the idea was we do appreciate and understand that it did come to TMT late. That said, if it were to come up today, if there was any dialogue that should transpire today at FPOM, it would be then articulated to your appropriate SRWP rep and then relayed on to your TMT rep.
This is the wrong place.
Why
for that.
This hasn't come up with SRWG is what I don't understand. TMT is the wrong place, and so is FPOM. It's an SRWG question. And get an SRWG call together very quickly and resolve the issue.
I think the reason is that it came to TMT was the timeliness of the request. So,
I mean, I don't understand why they didn't put together an SRWG call yesterday, because not all the SRWG people sit on TMT. That's including
right.
myself.
And FCON is not the forum to dump stuff from TMT that should be an SRWG.
But you kind of lost the time. Now you need it by tomorrow, so you got it. So you need to carve out a few minutes today to do this, and let's put it on the agenda. But are you formally recommending it be on the agenda?
No, I'm not.
Oh, you're not. Where will it be discussed?
It'll be discussed at SRWG, and also
tomorrow.
Based on some information that's been shared to date, my understanding is that there have been some discussions offline.
There has been.
And there have been. I mean, I appreciate the sensitivity of time here. I understand it's not presented in a timely manner that folks would like. That said, we're trying to implement an op.
Well, there's an SRWG meeting tomorrow. I mean, that seems like the place to do it.
Correct. It will come up. At
tomorrow morning.
It
do it early. There you go. There you go.
That would be fine. That would be fine with me to have it discussed tomorrow. But
I think you're going to have the right players there. Brad will be there.
Yeah, Tom's not here.
Tom's
there's not
there.
The reps aren't here, Rick. So I would just hang up and drive.
Totally.
Okay. I'll have to get the call-in information for tomorrow then.
Okay. I'll make sure you're on it one way or the other.
Okay.
You'll have your cell phone with you?
Yeah, I'll be in Sacramento by then.
You'll have your usual number?
Yeah. Can you give us your number?
Yeah.
I've got your number. I can give you a call tomorrow.
Okay. Sounds good.
Wait, I got the number here.
Okay, Rick.
All right. We're good.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
I'll call him.
Rick Kruger
has left the conference.
So reviewing the agenda, is there anything to add on? Any add-ons?
Okay. Getting better. Me too. Slowly. What'd you have?
I actually have two updates to add under for Walla Walla updates.
Okay.
Has joined the conference.
Oh,
Rusky.
That's
pretty cold.
Good morning, folks.
Good morning. You just joined us. Is that Russ?
Yeah.
Yes, that's Russ.
Hey, Russ.
There's one other, too.
Anybody else join us besides Russ?
Yeah, Shane Scott, Public Power Council.
Hey, Shane. Okay, we're just about to add some items to the agenda. Tim's got some from Walla Walla updates.
Yeah, just a quick update from Little Goose regarding an incident that occurred late last night. So we can add that under updates, as well as Little Goose line outage. Update.
So I'll put 328 Little Goose.
Yep.
Okay.
Anybody else?
I wanted something to take off. 7 fish counts. Take that off of there and leave it off for now.
Okay.
I'll get around to thinking about that another day, but I haven't had time.
Just when you're thinking about it.
My only reason for putting it on is just to make sure Washington shows up at the meetings, and boy, they have. So we're in good shape.
Nice.
It's only the second month.
What's that?
Okay. We'll scratch 3.2.7, Lomo debris incident. We don't need to talk about it.
That was a carryover from, that was actually a last month item that I briefed out. So.
Okay. Anything else? Before we get started, let's approve March minutes. Any comments on March? Can't believe it's already May 12th. Crying out loud.
Yeah,
it should be April.
April meeting.
Sorry, April minutes.
Hopefully, I got your comments on that.
And real quick, anybody using the website? FPOM, putting all the stuff there. Use it? Good.
No.
You should be using it. Please. Please
Why?
Do. Check it out.
Well, that's
Please.
Where all the change forms go.
It's all right there.
To die.
I just want you guys to be familiar with it. Because
exactly.
It's
to die.
It's
I
constantly changing.
I spend a lot of time on it.
It's good. It's a nice resource.
It's constantly changing. So
don't have to live there.
Reports
there.
Are there.
Mm-hmm. We'll start putting
Still
your picture
don't have
there.
To live there.
A picture of Fredericks.
It's fine.
Fredericks, picture of the month. That's what I'll do. FPOM member of the month.
There you go. June would be a good one for Fredericks because
Member
you know,
of the month.
His birthday.
Do a calendar.
Yeah.
I could put their picture.
All right. So, with that, before we get into, let's do our action items. We've got some Portland action items. 211. Bonneville sluiceway chain gates. Dennis and Tammy are going to work on a change form. And Walla Walla of Portland's going to include... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong way. And Sean and Dennis, we're going to talk to...
did you talk to him?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Talk about Aon Sill in 1B.
Rick
is back.
He's back.
Hey, Rick, what's
I'm
up?
I'm back!
I thought we got rid of you.
So yeah, I-5 is really boring, and so I'm going to listen to you guys.
Okay. You must not be in the northern part of California.
Start speeding and swerving.
No, I'm between
I'm sure you'll get a helicopter on your butt.
Yeah, that's boring.
So Dennis.
So update on Chaingate. I did speak with Sean, asking him about
this
maximizing.
Askelson.
This is Askelson, not the other Sean. They are adult Sean. And we talked...
versus the juvenile Sean.
The juvenile Sean. And 1A can be technically put down on sill and left there.
Yeah.
So we'll work with the project on... We can put it down and it will not impact...
1B or 3.
Right. He's still doing a little bit of work on 1B and how right. far we can put it at. So he wanted to look at it in his little model run and get back to me, and I talked to him like last Thursday.
Okay.
So he was going to do a quick model run to see at what elevation we could set 1B at so we could maximize. He was going to look at mean forebay and then set it and then see what he could do setting it at mean forebay.
Well, can we get this? We should get this done right away. I mean,
yeah.
Now, today, as soon as possible.
Okay. Well, I'll go back and I'll ask him if he's done a run.
Fisher Passing.
So.
Okay. Well, I just as long as we can get 1A on sill. Get that done as soon as possible and put 1B at 2 foot or whatever.
Well, right now 1B set at like 73 or something like that.
Yep, should be.
Yeah.
So the only question Sean had was if he goes another foot
72.
At 72 and you've got 1A already maximized, there may be this wall of water created by 1A that may inhibit one more foot. You know, it may slow the transition down enough to where he's thinking 73 might be maximized there, but he's going to look at it. He just wants to see what the influence of 1A is going to be.
Yeah, and have him work with Ed on this too.
Yeah.
Because I want to make sure to maximize the
Yeah.
What's the elevation of 1A on sill?
68. I think you can go down to 68 on one.
I think
68 is on a cleaned slot that's perfect, and I think depending on if you have a little bit of silt or anything, so it'll be put on
68,
you know, 68, 69 it'll be put on sill. Okay. Now the one question we had too is that you're maximizing 1A on sill, so you're taking a big chunk of water. What is the benefit of going to 1B and you'll have your flow net will be there, but do you want to how far do you go there when you've already got one gate that's already maximized the bottom? Sean was just a little bit nervous about dragging it to the bottom, too, and making sure that any flows coming in from the upper channel is not being...
We don't want to backwater or anything.
That's what I mean.
That's the issue.
So anyway, that was the question he had. 1A doesn't influence that, but he wanted to specifically look at 1B to make sure that what elevation we set doesn't
backwater the channel. That's the only issue. So if he's... Yeah.
Yep.
The other things I'm not so sure about, what you were talking about, setting up a backwater for 1A, that doesn't make sense to me. So.
Oh, you mean just whatever the influence of 1A water
1A
is on 1B?
That doesn't make sense to me, so I'd like to understand that.
Okay.
There shouldn't be an influence.
Okay.
It should just all go. I can't imagine if there's a backwater effect on 1A, 1B from 1A.
Depends how close you are to the glory hole.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, within 15 feet.
I'll ask him about it.
So what do you need to make it understand it again?
Well, what are the details? I mean, how far can we go? Right now, if we can get 1A all the way to the bottom, that's what we want.
1A can be on bottom, so we've answered that question. I think 1B...
2.5 feet, which is what the others are set at, that's where it should be.
Yep.
If there's a problem with that, then I want to know that.
Okay, if we can't put it...
moving 1B to 1C, then that's fine, but let's talk about that.
I don't think 1B will be a problem at 2.5 feet, but I don't know that it can be on sill.
Right, and that wasn't what we were asking for anyway.
I'll answer that question. If we can put it... As low as we can, we will, and I'll tell you why.
But it shouldn't be any higher than the other, than 3 or 6 or 10.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Let's just find out where it's going to be. But what I do want to make sure is that this doesn't happen, you know, after the fish have, you know, after the horse has left the barn here. So.
Yeah.
So can you get to that?
I'll call Sean as soon as I get back to the office,
And email.
Okay.
Email out to Tammy and Gary, and we'll make sure everybody else gets it.
Expert.
Thanks. 212 is the spillway weirs, Portland and Walla Walla. We're going to include acronyms in the fish passage plan.
Yeah, we just haven't done a change form in that yet.
Just haven't done a change form, but it's coming. Change form coming. That leads us into Big Tim and his action items.
Okay. This is an item that can probably be taken off for about at least the next 2 months. I'm trying to get some information from Ryan.
Okay.
I asked him a month ago, and he said, yeah, I know I need some time to work on the Lomo and McNary outfalls.
Bypass outfalls.
Yeah, and so sent him a reminder again about 2 weeks ago, and he's just said, unless this is an absolute emergency, he's diverted on that. So... Sean Milligan is aware of this and was going to get someone else reassigned this task of pulling back some information.
This doesn't have to be Ryan at all. This can be, if you've got some junior engineers in your shop, this is a junior engineer issue. This is just looking at water depths and conveyance of the ITS into the sluiceway outfall.
So how about if we leave it on and just carry it over so we don't lose it?
Yeah, that's fine. I just don't. I always feel awkward telling you that. I know it's there, but
let's put it into the August or something like that time frame, because this is really only for when we shut down and run north.
Right.
So September, October.
Yeah, we'll just put it. We'll leave it on there and say carry it over to August.
Yep.
So we don't lose it.
Okay, that sounds good.
No problem.
All right. Number two is sockeye counts. Hey, Russ, you're on the phone?
Yes, I am.
So, I think you were going to check to make sure that it was okay that we use the 18-inch line that we have on the count windows.
And I did check with folks here, and yeah, we're not going to make a big issue out of it, and I understand the folks running the count don't want too many lines, but we question what's more important to the region, a coho jack line or a sockeye jack line, was the one question we had. And the folks there, you know, they have a jack line for schnook and a jack line for coho, and didn't want to add another one for sockeye. And
I think the coho line is at 18.
That's right.
So why would it be an additional line for sockeye?
Well,
we're
looking at 18.7 inches, right, Russ?
I don't know. I don't, and that's one of the, and I talked to folks right after, and that was like 2 months ago. I didn't make last F-bomb call. And so I did talk to folks about it, and I don't remember, and I think that Heindel's in, and I can ask him. But it was one is, from my understanding, and like I said, it's been at least a month old, and I'm not certain of all the details, but from my understanding, we have a line for Chinook jacks and coho jacks.
We have a 12-inch line, that's the cutoff there, and we have an 18-inch line for the jack line, and we have a 22-inch line. We have been using for the past, 3 years, big run of sockeye, the 18-inch line.
Right.
Between jack and adult. And does that 18?
It's the side.
So that 18-inch line, is that 18. The line that was designed for Chinook, coho, or sockeye?
18-inch line is coho jack.
Right. So that's the
only
coho
with the
jack
1-inch wide.
What's the Chinook jack line?
22.
Okay, what's the 12-inch line for?
Just a little cutout.
It's the minimum length.
Yeah.
And so, Russ, what you're saying is let's maybe just get rid of the coho line and place it at 18.7, whatever you're saying for the sockeye line should be?
Well, that was a question that we wanted to ask, and I don't know where the right line for sockeye should be. I could find out. But that's one thing we just wanted to ask folks, you know, we understand that we don't want to add another line as complex as it is for those county folks. I'm amazed at how good a job they do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I don't want to add another line for them to try to have to deal with. The question is what we think is more important, being able to do a good job of identifying coho jacks or sockeye jacks?
Okay. Yeah.
It might depend on what you're seeing more of, too.
Talk to Tab.
Yeah. I Mike Peterson, 18.7 is his line for coho jacks, sockeye jacks, adult jacks, sockeye fish. That's the only difference that we see right there, but, 7/10 of an inch.
Yeah. And so it's obviously not a big deal. And we were okay. We're not fired up about it. But we definitely don't want to make a change mid-season this year. Although both coho and sockeye aren't returning, so I don't know how hard it would be to move.
So Russ, it seems like if right now we're going to stay the way we are for the season, if this is something that's important to you guys, let us know and we can talk about taking off that 18-inch coho line and perhaps making a 18.7 sockeye line,
right.
And we can have that discussion. If it's important to you, we'll drill into it.
If it's like a different color, I mean, I don't think it would be that obtrusive. I mean, I don't know if some of those count stations up on the snake, but I don't think it would be that big of a deal to have an extra line in there. If that was
Hold on. I'd just like to say something. If this is an issue, I think we could probably put a colored extension on the 18-inch line, whatever that width is, the 0.7, and there could be one wide line with the color, right color, left color. You can call it good. If that's where we want to go to count it and not lose anything.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the problem with the other line?
What do you want? Number one is I think that we shouldn't make it any more complex for the counters. I don't like this idea of two lines real close together. That doesn't seem right. But like I said, it's not a massive issue for us by any means.
Who's asking for this?
That was just a question. You know, when I asked him, I said, you guys, you know, is it a big deal? They said, no, it's not a big deal. And then one of them said, well, you know, maybe the region ought to think what's more important to be accurate on identifying coho jacks or sockeye jacks.
Who cares?
I said, well, I'll ask.
Could care less.
And so instead of adding another line and having slight difference between coho and jacks, I think that we should just think about it and make a call what we think is more important and what we probably would need to talk to the nest bird folks, because they're the most interested in the coho, because it's their program on trying that.
The way I think we're going to leave this now is no in-season change. We'll keep it as is. And as you have discussions within your agency and with other folks, if this is important, we can certainly put it back on the agenda. And if that means taking off a line and putting a different line up or expanding one line.
Is 7/10 really that important?
We can.
Yeah, and can a human really differentiate that as a fish?
The
fish just don't sit there at that line. No. That's got to be within the error and wiggle range there. So
yeah.
I
would say
the point.
Difference, I mean, yeah.
Pick one line.
I'm not that. Like I said, we're not that. What we could do is maybe do it at 18.4.
Exactly.
You know, an error on either side.
Some big management decisions made.
It's obviously not a big deal. How about that?
Right.
Okay,
I'll
next.
Ask around if we think it's worth bringing up. I'll put it on the agenda sometime in the future, and we can consider it for the future.
Okay, hey, thanks, Russ.
Got it.
Okay. Number three, Ice Harbor unit priority. Scott, is there any update on that yet?
It's in my computer. I'll get it to our next meeting.
Okay.
I got wording back from TBL. So.
Okay. And last Walla Walla update or action item.
Has joined the conference.
Spill patterns. Bill, I understand you and Bob were down looking at the low-mo model, looking at different spill patterns. I don't know if you have anything you'd like to share about that trip.
Ryan, Bob, and I are working on a new spill pattern for Lower Monumental that's a crossover between the uniform and the bulk, between 60K CFS and becoming totally uniform in 100K CFS.
So that's in progress right now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And we'll have it ready for viewing, I expect, in the fall for people that want to go down, and we'll check it out at different flow levels and then modify it or approve it at that time. So the change form will be in the mix probably, Christmas or January when we get it done.
Good.
So
okay.
The plan is to have one
pattern.
Spill pattern for Lomo. Yeah. When we arrived at that, we saw that the bulk pattern did not work well at the new outfall site between 60 and 100.
Right.
So we found a transition or a crossover at 60, which is a combination of bulk and uniform, and we transitioned further and further to the uniform by the time we reached 100.
Oh, okay. So there'll never be a point where you're flipping back and forth between.
No.
Okay.
One spill.
No, one pattern.
Okay. Good. I appreciate that. I didn't know that was going to be coming this this fall or.
Nothing to argue about. There's only one pattern.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. We got to start on it at 60, the crossover pattern.
Yeah.
And then Ryan's going to dry lap it on his computer.
Lowry?
Yeah. Yeah, between what we found was best at 60 as a crossover pattern. He's going to move that up, mm-hmm. 70, 80, 90, 100 becoming the uniform.
So he's going to blend it from one to the other over that flow range.
You got it.
Yeah.
You got it.
Then you'll go down and check it next fall and see if it's right. And
cool.
Below 60, the bulk pattern's fine.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Bill. That helps.
Yeah.
That's it for Walla Walla.
Okay, great. So updates, 3.1 is researcher updates. We've got Pat and Josh from WDFW here to talk about their proposal to estimate the Lower Columbia River alternative commercial fishing gear mortality based on a capture tag recapture design under pit tags. Yesterday, a group from the Technical Advisory Committee for Harvest and Pat and Josh and others went out there. Tammy, you want to just give a quick overview of what happened there, what it was all about, since I wasn't there?
Basically just showed them what the AFF does, how it functions, and they looked at it to see if it would meet their needs.
Okay, with that, I guess you have a PowerPoint presentation you'd like to give? So
yes.
It's all yours. Thanks.
Okay, well, thank you for having me here today. This is part of a pretty big project for us, and it's Oregon and Washington, but Washington's taking the lead. We're looking at an alternative gear implementation for commercial fisheries in the Lower Columbia River. And why are we doing this project? One of the first things is fish, for wild fish, to benefit wild fish. Right now, we have fisheries in the Lower Columbia River, especially commercial fisheries, that can't release natural fish, at least fall Chinook and coho, in a live state. So we have basically 100% mortality on all the fish in our fisheries right now. Doing these gears gives us a way to catch fish and be able to catch the hatchery fish, keep the hatchery fish, and release the natural fish or wild fish so they can continue to move upstream. It's important for communities in the lower river, especially. We have a lot of small rural communities in the lower Columbia River that have grown up dependent on fisheries and fishing opportunities. It's the lifeblood of their communities and an economic engine for them. Current ESA restrictions and their inability to release natural fish really limits their fishing opportunity and has a pretty major negative effect economically on those communities. And finally, it's important for the fishers who participate in those fisheries to maintain some kind of family wage income. They do fish in other parts of the country, Alaska and Canada, but this is an important part of their ability to maintain a livelihood that they've grown up with and fish for some of them for multiple generations in the family. For us, one of the really big things is we want to make sure that our fisheries are managed consistent with all age recovery efforts. So this is, we want to do this study to make sure that when we say we're going to do something as the fisheries and we're going to make changes in our fisheries, those changes bear out. And we have the data to manage those fisheries so that we achieve the savings that we think we're going to get in terms of fish moving upstream. For non-Indian Columbia River commercial fisheries, there's several things that are important, but there's four real key ones. First of all, there's a conservation level set forth in the harvest biop that was just recently adopted and implemented.
Clear.
And so
has left the conference.
So what this does is allows us to ensure that we're going to achieve those conservation levels. If this study provides us the data that tells us we're going to meet those levels. We also need to manage our fish survival so we provide the survival rates out of our fisheries that we expected when we did our all-age planning to recover fish populations in the basin. And this data will ensure that we do it. Another one is to ensure conservation effectiveness. And I'll talk about it in just a little bit more regarding the biop and conservation effectiveness, and that is a key part of the biop. And finally, this will help us do a hatchery run. So right now it will give us a better ability to choose better brood stock, keep our hatchery fish off the spawning grounds, and implement hatchery reform to benefit not only lower river populations, but fish populations destined for the effort.
Join the conference.
We do have the FERC, the FCRPS biological opinions, and it calls for some things and sets some actions out for us. First, it talks about evaluating methods to develop or expand use of selective gears. That's the exact purpose of this fishery, this study, and I'll talk about the gears in just a minute, but that's what this study is doing. Number two, the focus we're here today to talk to you about is one specific part of the study, and that is the mortality, post-release mortality rate. In order to implement any kind of selective fisheries at any time, we need to know what the survival rate is of the fish that are released in that fishery. And foremost is the conservation effectiveness program. We said that the biop calls for conservation effectiveness and asks the fisheries to do certain things in order to achieve the conservation goals we need. This data that we're going to collect with this project will allow us to do this and will allow us to manage our fisheries so that we achieve the conservation goals that are set forth in the biop and through this conservation effectiveness program. So the first real full year of doing a study was 2010. And 2010, we fished 6 purse seines, 5 beet seines, and 2 trap nets. We fished for Chinook and Coho, and we fished during the time frame of mid-August to late October. And
join the conference.
It was 30 days per fisher. So we had a lot of days out there, and we got some very valuable data. This is a map of where they fished. You can see we had people fishing as low in the river as Owako and as far up in the river as above Rhea Island, above Portland. So we spread people out throughout the river, and they were using different types of gear throughout the river. In some places, we had people fishing side by side so that they could compare those gear types. Here's the catch we saw. The beach seine caught about 8,000 fish, the purse seine a little over 14,000 fish, and the trap net failed miserably. As we're moving forward, the beach seine and the perch seine really show some promise for implementation down the line. The trap net, we has moved on and will not continue to test that. It just wasn't effective. The thing about it was hard to put the right kind of wing walls up to get the fish to go into the trap and get the fish in the trap. We did try to do a little bit of mortality work with this study last year. The one thing we did do well was we had the test fish itself, we had immediate mortality rates. And the biggest mortality was in jacks, small jacks that got wedged in the net. But we only had 29 mortalities out of almost 23,000 fish caught. So a 0.12% immediate mortality rate, which is really, really impressive, I think. But the question is, what's the long-term mortality? We did try to do some short-term holding of fish in net pens for 48 hours, 24 to 48 hours. Unfortunately, we were very ineffective at that. It's hard to find the right place to put a net pen that has flow that doesn't actually increase the stress by holding the fish in the net pens. And the other one was otters. They find fish wherever you put them, and you can see we had 20% of the fish taken out of the net by otters. The other one is we did have a sea lion visit one of our net pens and open up the net completely and allow all the fish to escape. So it's real challenging doing that through net pens, and I just don't think we're ever going to be effective getting a good mortality estimate using those net pens. We're moving forward in 2011, and we're moving forward this year with, a total of, we're moving forward with perch seines and beach seines. The perch seines we're moving forward, we're moving with 6 different perch seines and 10 beach seines in the test group. They're going to fish that same area on the map that we saw before. And they're going to, so that's where the main test fishery is going to occur. It's going to occur in that area. The other piece of it is the mortality study, and we really want to be very, very aggressive and move into a high-quality mortality study that really gives us some good data and some good answers regarding post-release mortality rates. There's 2 groups of fish that we're going to have for the mortality study. There's going to be 2 perch seines and 2 beach seines, and they'll be fishing about 5 to 10 miles below Bonneville.
Yeah, between River Mile 134, which is Dodson Point, and Bonneville.
And we're looking to capture 1,000 fish and tag 1,000 fish per gear type, per species. That would be the test group. The control group for the mortality study, what we would propose is collecting that control group at the Bonneville AFF, the adult fish facility there. We would take those fish downstream and release them near the fishing grounds, and we would do 1,000 tags per species as a control. This is very similar and nearly identical to the spring Chinook program and control that we did when we implemented a tangle net study about 5 or 7 years ago when we started that study. And that provided us some very, very good data and provided us some very, very quality data in terms of precision. We were plus or minus 2.5% on the mortality rate. So that's what we're hunting for, is some really good data. What we would do is pit tag the fish. All the fish would be pit tagged. Recoveries of the pit tags would occur at Bonneville Dam and upstream anywhere else where those pit tags are decoded. So we would have along a mortality estimate to Bonneville, and then a mortality estimate beyond Bonneville upstream also. For the control group, there's some key things that have to happen to make us able to do this. One is we need ESA coverage, and we've been talking with NOAA over the last week or so. What we would do is permit this directly through NOAA, and we already have a through the harvest biop, we already have research impacts for the alternative gear study as a whole. So any mortalities associated with this program, either immediate or long-term, would count against those research impacts for the alternative gear study. And those research impacts would cover the control group and cover all the test fisheries occurring in the lower river. So that would be, and we talked to Enrique Patino and Peter Diger here over the last last day or two, and they have confirmed that's the way to move, best way to move forward with permitting this particular fishery. We will probably need some alternative operations at the AFF in order to get us a sample size that's going to be adequate to give us some good estimates. Some of the things we're considering are increase the number of days. Right now, the tribe works out there 4 days a week. So one of the options would be we work on the days that the tribes don't work on and do that. Another option is we work at the fish facility after the tribes have completed theirs and just to extend the hours of the day. Another one is in order to get a few more fish, increase the number of fish that are in the holding tank. We're not doing a lot of measuring and data collecting that the tribes do on the fish they get in the tank, so we can move. All we're doing is collecting these fish and pit tagging them. So we can just collect the fish, pit tag them, and we can move them through the tank a lot quicker. So the tank could probably handle a few more fish than it does right now. I think it's limited to 3. And then the last one we would think about is some variation from temperature protocols. We're looking at doing this time frame the last week in August through October. So the temperature issue would be just a couple of weeks there at that end of August, early September time frame where we might have a little bit of issue on that particular part. But that's the things we're talking about doing. At the end of the day, our desired outcome is we want to be able to account for harvest mortalities of all species associated with our fisheries. And we want the scientifically sound release mortality accounting. So we want a good estimate of what our release mortalities are in our fisheries. We want a highly precise estimate that gives us something that, like I talked about, we can ensure that we're accomplishing our conservation goals set forth in the BIA, and fisheries are doing their part. This is really a chance to hold fisheries' feet to the fire and hold us as managers' feet to the fire to make sure that we manage our fisheries in a way that provides the conservation benefits it's supposed to. And finally, one of the reasons we're coming here right now is we'd like to implement some kind of alternative gear fishery, whether it be a permit fishery, some kind of limited fishery in 2013 that uses alternative gears. To do that, we think we'd need a minimum of a couple of years worth of mortality data in hand to do that. That's why we're looking to try to implement that this fall, this mortality test. And we did look at other possible alternatives on where to get this control group, but a lot of those alternatives would lead to a lot of questions from folks regarding study design and the accuracy of the long-term mortality estimates. So at the end of the day, we went back to the study design that was used for the tangle nets about 7 or 8 years ago. It was peer-reviewed scientifically and is a quality study design. So that's where we really went to, and that's how we're looking to move forward on that.
All right, Pat, I got a couple questions. First off, thanks for the presentation and bringing it to FPOM. I've reviewed this, and I'm sure you're aware after your visit to the AFF some of the issues we have there. Part of your study doesn't talk about making any improvements at the AFF, which I think is going to be important as far as tank size and timing. The temperatures there are a big issue with us. We have protocols in our fish passage plan. And looking at this, it says your contingency plan is at the hatcheries, and this is a hatchery fish study as well. I don't see why we can't be using that as your surrogate control from Spring Creek and the fall right Chinook at Bonneville. They're ready available. You can handle them there. I don't think there'll be any impacts. If we go to the AFF, there's going to be lots of impacts on the run of the river fish. We have a lot of delayed mortality. I mean, we go through this every year just with the CritFic about sampling time and temperatures, and it's always a battle, and we're about to have that battle right now with you.
So to respond to those that question specifically regarding the controls, so if we use Spring Creek Hatchery as a control, those fish have swam for another week upstream, got into a hatchery. We take them back out of that hatchery, take them back downstream. TUIs come in at a fairly strong state of brightness. And so when we floated that out as a thought, we got a lot of criticism for that particular control. The other piece with the Bonneville hatchery is a control for brights. That's a pretty short trip, and we know that brights go far into the basin, well up into Hanford Reach. To use return to Bonneville hatchery as a bright, we probably will get some criticism in terms of tracking the full mortality associated with those. So we're really looking to try to get a mortality estimate. But at the end of the day, we are not having a lot of people questioning our mortality estimates at the end of the day.
Well, I would strongly question the mortality estimates given your controls. These aren't controls.
Yeah, there's issues with your controls.
These are certainly treatment. They're just a second treatment. True control.
Can we get a mic close to Gary? I'm having a hard time hearing him.
Yeah, sorry, Rick. The true control, what you're trying to control for are the fish in the river that aren't handled, that aren't netted. These fish that you're talking about as control will be handled. You're talking about not using anesthesia, so they'll be roughly handled. They'll be trucked back to the netting site. So I just, you know, once you've done that to what you're calling a control, what it will do is inflate your mortality estimate or survival estimate, actually. It'll make it look a lot better than what it actually is. So I can't hardly believe that you've had scientific review and that people are okay with this as a control group, because it's not a control group.
Well, we have had scientific review. We have had peer review. It will go to ISRP. We have had TAC review of this. The TAC is supportive, very supportive of this process.
It just doesn't. I can't understand how.
The handling, Josh, I'll let you talk about how we're going to handle them and whether we are going to anesthetize them or not, exactly how we'll handle them to make them a control for us.
So the treatment fish will not be anesthetized. It's going to simulate a real fishing situation.
Right.
The control group that we're asking for would be anesthetized in the AFF using standard AFF protocols with the modifications that we've talked about in this PowerPoint. The issue you guys touched on, the Bonneville Dam brights not being run-of-the-river fish, that was one of the questions that our statistician rose. And also the tules from Spring Creek, the duration between Bonneville and Spring Creek hatchery, they've gone through a tribal fishery. They've sat in the hatchery for X amount of time, so now they're even more gravid than the original time that they went through.
I understand. Right.
And so there's tag loss issues there, and we know that there is a little bit more difference in handling as far as the anesthetic, trucking the fish downstream, releasing them, and putting them through again. But it did work with Charmaine's study, and that was peer reviewed and. It passed muster then.
I just don't see how you can get past that control not being a true control. I don't care how many people review it. I mean, that's when you've handled those fish in a way that's different from in-river fish, and you're trying to compare these two in-river fish and weren't handled through your netting process, those controls aren't controls. They're just another treatment. There may be a reference group, but they're not a control because they don't represent the population you're trying to infer an estimate of.
Do you have enough pit tag data to say what the expected returns of some of these other fish would be, so you could use the pit tag system at Bonneville?
Well, there are some, I was going to get to that too.
Okay.
There are some other alternative ways of doing this. We've been thinking about this the last couple of days too. We support trying to get this information. Mm-hmm. I mean, what you're doing is good stuff, but I'm really concerned that the control doesn't represent what you're saying the control will represent,
yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
therefore will inflate or deflate, depending on how you look at it, your estimates of mortality or survival. So that's what I'm concerned about. And then, you know, if you don't have a good control, then you don't have a good study. I don't care how you go about it. I mean, you can have very tight precision estimates, but they're not of what people want you to measure. So that's the concern I have, is it looks great on paper, but the reality is that you're measuring something else. You're not measuring what, unless I'm wrong here, it seems to me what we want to know is the comparison of what you've handled in these nets versus what didn't get handled in the nets, what moved up the river without being touched by the harvest process.
Yeah.
Yeah, granted.
That's the control.
And we tried to address that. You know, you're saying that a non-representative sample. If you go to Bonneville Hatchery or you go to Spring Creek, those aren't representative.
I agree with you, too, and those are problems, too.
So if you guys
but there's another alternative. Yeah, maybe, and that is in using pit tag fish. Well, first that we thought about RT as maybe a better way, of, you know, radio tag or active tag to at least reduce the numbers of fish, but you're still doing this recycling thing, which I think is a problem. The other way to do this might be to, you know, you guys are probably getting some genetic markers from these fish anyway. I mean, I would be taking a punch from each fish you handle. Well, you could be. I mean, you're already clipping a caudal fin. There's all kinds of things you're doing. If you're clipping the caudal, don't throw the chunk away. You know, now you've got your genetic sample. You could determine where those fish were bound for as you tag them, or after them, post-tagging. This would be a post-tagging thing, but you could identify whether those fish are upriver-bound fish or not. So when you tag them, and then compare that, you say, okay, here's a group of fish that were upriver-bound that we tagged. They passed Bonneville pit tag detectors. You'll know who they were there. Now do they make it to McNary Dam because they're upriver-bound? The control group would be the fish you never touched, but were already pit tagged in the river for other purposes. That also went past Bonneville Dam and were bound for McNary Dam.
Yep.
So now you have two groups. One's a true control because you never touched them. The other group is the control that you touched, tagged, genetically identified to say, yeah, this is an upriver fish. It's headed for Idaho or it's headed for someplace in the upper Columbia. Mm-hmm. So now you know these two stocks. I know Thule's, that's not going to work. But, you know, I don't know that you can have everything. You know, at least if we can look at those stocks, and Thule may be the most susceptible, so I don't know how you get past that. But
They don't fit tag any Thule's just because they're too small.
Oh, we do.
But I think you do it a certain amount, right?
Well, Spring Creek are pit tagged in fairly good amounts. So there you can get back to the hatchery. So there's that's a good point. So those fish you tag, go back to the hatchery. Those fish that were naturally tagged already, go back to the hatchery. There's your comparison. There's your treatment and control groups. Mm-hmm. So I think you have the potential to do a treatment and control group without even handling fish at Bonneville Dam, but by... You know, I know it's a little bit fuzzier than just a concrete, okay, we released this many fish and here's how many made it back for each group. That's really nice and tidy, but it's not a true control.
Yeah.
And so,
but you
know,
could get an,
day,
you
really
get an
argue.
Estimate of how many pit tag fish you sent out in the hatchery release and what the anticipated return on
we
those
know that.
Is.
We know what that is, and that's hundreds and hundreds of Thule's, as well as hundreds and hundreds of upriver brights from Idaho are from this thing.
Yeah.
Mostly in Idaho.
So, just a question, are coho pit tagged?
I don't know. You know, I guess I'm throwing out an alternative.
So, no, and I appreciate
and
that.
In a way that we might look at this and get a true control that you can say, we didn't touch those fish at all, so they're good controls.
One of the other things, I mean, we'll look at that and look and see. One of the concerns we have is how many fish.
I know.
And
it isn't as tidy.
A sample size that gives us an estimate that's, if we have a plus or minus 50%, then we really don't have a mortality estimate. So we have to have a sample size that gets us an estimate. One of the things we could do that I'm kind of thinking about as we're doing this is, we'll be reading pit tags, you know, as we're collecting these fish and so that we don't tag them twice with the same pit tag. One of the things we could do is we could do the control piece from the AFS. We will have pit tags and see how they get to Bonneville Dam. We will have other fish that are untouched and how they get to Bonneville Dam. So you'll actually really have, it's almost
three groups here.
And that may give us some ability to address what you're talking about is what is the impact of that handling so that we can account for that handling when we do our mortality study. So that would give us some ability to do a little more than we're thinking, and I think that could improve the study, but I think we're still probably going to need at some point some number of fish out of the AFS to give us a number of fish on the controls.
Yeah, I'm not going to let up on that control issue because I don't think it's a control, but I will tell you a couple of points here. From take, keep in mind, take includes harass. So So anytime you even move fish into the AFF facility, that's a take. So the permit has to account for that. And I haven't talked to our guys to determine, you know, how far they've gone with that. But I know Enrique was a little bit surprised at that. So under the definition of ESA, take is a broad definition. And it includes any time that you're moving fish away from their intended migratory path or any natural or normal behavior. If you alter that, you're incurring take on that population. So I know you know these are listed fish. Regarding alterations or relaxation of the criteria for Bonneville AFF, we're not going to let that happen. So you have to maintain, whatever you're going to do is going to have to be done under the existing rules and regulations we have. You know, we're not going to throw the baby out the bathwater here. We're going to keep this, want to work with you, try to get this done, but there are things there. We have fought hard to keep those criteria in place. You know, we tell CritFic every year, no, we're not going to turn around and just, okay, it's not, especially for 4,000
When you tell them
4,
no, you
fish.
Tell them for no for a good reason.
I mean,
this that time of year, there's a high susceptibility of higher stress levels, and so that's the only thing I had concerned about, too, is tagging at that time of year or handling that time of the year, the stress level and recovery that may bias your sample
is
totally different than cooler water temperatures.
How many you say what time of year, what time of year?
I think you were talking about August, September.
September.
And I mean, that's just...
we have a 70-degree limit. We have the 60, what is it, 72, 70, 72-degree limits. We have the time of day. We have the numbers of fish that are in the ladder. We have several restrictions there, but those have to stay in place. So whatever we do has to recognize that those are hard constraints.
That's 70 you try to get per species?
Thousands.
So in August or September, you may not have any flow through the second powerhouse this year, looking ahead on what outages you're proposing.
Oh, with the entry 7, yeah.
Well, that's not this year.
That's next year.
No, it's next year.
So that may impact in the future that you aren't going to collect any fish.
2-year study, so yeah. That could, good point, Scott. Yeah.
You don't get any over.
I just think there's a lot of reasons why looking at another way of, I know you've gone through this as a good proposal, but
I would like to see the peer review too. I'd like to see what the peer review said back about, because under our SRWG process and about looking specifically at a control, I mean, I can't believe that they didn't give you comments back that says this control isn't a true control in a research.
Well, that was a different study too, wasn't it, that you guys had reviewed? Was it this study?
Was it?
It was the same.
Look at the same question.
Yeah, looking at the same question, same purpose, same exact methodology.
Just spring fish, totally different time of the year,
spring snook,
spring snook, much cooler water temperature.
Spring fish.
But the amount of handling that goes on with what's called a control for the river population just doesn't make sense to me. So
we would get spanked if the Corps proposed something like this. I mean, I'm just.
It's always been a big issue with our SRWG process: is what is a true control?
Yeah.
You know, and there's discussions of, well, it's really a second treatment, or it's a reference group, or is it really a control?
Yeah.
Using the word control is that's a high bar.
It is.
You don't meet that with this, as far as I'm concerned. Any study that comes out of it would be questionable in my mind. So I think there's a reason to really try to do this in a different way that keeps those fish that are true controls in the river and never... We've got a ton of fish out there that are tagged, lots of fish that are tagged. So if there's a way that we could...
Seems like the ideal thing to do would be able to detect pit tag adults in river.
Right.
Similar to the way that we drag the,
the trawl.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's another way of doing it. Sample rate's pretty small, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we don't have the gear technology right now. That's the problem.
For adults.
But we do have detectors at McNary. We have detectors at Bonneville.
Yeah.
The only thing that wouldn't give you is the survival from where they seen them to Bonneville. That's the piece that they'd be missing. But you could get that, I think, if you went to the hatchery at Bonneville that you're talking about, get those fish and use that, even though that's an iffy control and people have concerns with that. But they have concerns with this as well. And so you use those to get that distance from the seine to Bonneville, and then you use your pit tag, known order pit tag detection fish that we're talking about to verify if that's a valid sample or not. and then use those to go from Bonneville to wherever their destination is, McNary or Snake River or whatever. So there's a way you could look at that, I think.
So again, we're looking at examining sport caught fish in this area for pit tags, installation of a pit tag array at Bonneville Hatchery, and also doing the natural spawn surveys in the fall, looking at carcasses that are recovered in that reach there.
So are you proposing to, at places like Drano Lake or wherever, wand fish as they come out of the fishery?
Yes, the sport caught fish are all going to be on the Washington side as they're sampled in the sport fishery. They are.
See, that's a way to stop. Okay, because I was worried about that. If they were popping out there, you wouldn't have a control on that or handle on that. But
so,
you would.
And the tribal fishery is also.
So you're sampled. Covering all the bases.
So that's what we've tried to do and try to give us as least biased sample as possible.
Did you say you're putting a pit tag detector at Tanner Creek?
At Bonneville Hatchery, yes.
Okay, so where would that be?
At the entrance to their ladder.
Okay.
Well, I know you guys don't want to handle more fishing than you have to either. Yeah. So, I mean, this is something I think would be win-win if we could come up with an alternative that kept the control as a true control and didn't handle as many fish and still got the goal of the program, which is important to everybody. So. I just recommend some more discussion there if we can.
Okay.
I know it's getting late for you, but
And we realize that the sample size per species is large, but looking at previous immediate mortality rates, in order to have the precision to detect those small mortality rates, we had to go with large samples.
Right. Now, I understand that.
And one of the things that complicates it, of all things, is with the mortality rate we think is going to be so low that you need even a higher sample rate in order to have an accurate estimate of what that mortality rate is.
What mortality rate do we care about? I mean, that's the other thing. At some point, you say if it's not within this area, then we're okay with it.
If you tell us that we can go manage our fisheries with a 5% mortality rate, and we don't need to do a mortality study.
Well, I think that's something that needs to be talked about. No, I think that's important, because if killing every fish in the river to get a we don't want to do that. So,
don't want to do that.
There's got to be some sensible approach there.
But at the same point, we also want to have a mortality rate, and your agency is going to tell me that you need a mortality rate that you can prove and you can have scientifically justified.
I'm willing to talk to our folks about that.
We're kind of being put in a box here.
I understand. We don't want to put you in a box. We want to figure a way out of this box.
So, I mean, and that's what we're trying to do.
I'm not trying to put you in a box.
Yeah, so what mortality rate did you guys see for the spring fish? Just
it was with the tangle net, and that mortality rate was 14%.
That's pretty high then. So,
But that was with the tangle net, which is different. That's
you're
a small mesh. In essence, it's a small mesh gill net. So you're still actively capturing those fish. You're trapping them by their mouth or their gill plate or something. In this case, you're passively trapping those fish. You're corralling them. And so they are not in any way having to struggle or fight or
it's just handling stress.
So, yeah.
How do you in the future if this gear becomes the gear being used, how would fish actually get out of this? Would you have to handle each fish to get say yes, no, okay, you're gone, you're in? Or would there be it's cork line?
There's a couple of ways to do it. We've been using knotless nets, the rubber nets there.
It's a net them actually.
Dip them over,
okay, you're gone.
You dip
you're
them
out,
over the
out.
Side. Uh-huh. The other one you could do is dip out the ones you want,
and then the other
just
guys
drop,
and
the
then drop the
purse and let them go.
Yeah.
It just depends how effectively you can get at sorting those fish. And
right.
And I think it'll probably be a combination of both. There'll some you'll dip over as you're dipping the fish in, and then you'll say, okay, they're
at
all.
At this point, it's good. Let's go and narrow out. Yeah, that
exactly.
Makes sense. So that's going to vary as you go through the development process, too. Well, I think for the key is what is the precision? What is the mortality rate that we're looking to detect? That's first key. What's the precision you want on that estimate? Does it have to be 1%, 5%, or can it be higher than that? And then the plus or minus is a 95% precision, plus or minus 3, or whatever. Where are we at? In that, and then looking at doing this with genetically identified fish moving upriver versus those that are known source going past Bonneville. I think, looking at that, is warranted. I think I'd spend some time on that. You know, I know it's not as clean. I know that because you're not going to know every fish's origin. But it's still, I think, worth exploring because it gives you a true control. There's no question. There's no question the control is good. So, you know, that's the key there. I think it's worth grasping that. And I'm talking with Enrique yesterday. He was really concerned about control, too. So he knew it wasn't a good control. When, you know, if it's not a good control, then what are we really, what's the answer going to really mean?
And I don't think it's really fair to say it's not a good control. There okay. is no, it's hard to get the perfect control because you have to handle a fish to get the perfect control. That's why we tested the trap for 2 years.
You don't handle the fish to get the perfect control.
Well, to be able, right. So well, that's why the perfect, exactly that's why the perfect, that's why the perfect control is very difficult. That's why we used a trap net for 2 years. We worked 2 years to try to make a trap net work. Because if a trap net could have worked, we would have felt that would have been the perfect way to have the control. We couldn't do that. And so we were trying to be proactive and try to figure out a way not to end up having this discussion because we knew this was a big issue and it was important. We don't, and I understand the importance of the protocol. I do. Don't get me wrong on that. So we were trying to be proactive. I believe that the amount of handling by anesthetizing them, the short distance you're taking them, the short haul, I think that's pretty minimal handling, and I don't think it makes that a completely invalid control. It's not the perfect
that's
control, but I don't believe it makes it
there's
invalid.
There's also the fact that the
and
fish...
And we could very easily, like I talked about, do those fish and also compare them to fish that are more of the true controls to make sure we achieve our sample size to get us an accurate estimate and also test the quality of that control. Be able to adjust that control.
Yeah, the adjustment is fuzzy. That,
so
that's a
if
that's
there
a
is
possibility.
That's assuming there's a difference.
I can see three groups here. I'm still not sure that I would want
Rick
to.
Rick Berger.
Bye, Rick.
Has left the conference.
Be back.
Keeps going out.
We can never get rid of Rick. Thoroughly.
Well, I'd like to.
Does this happen all meeting long?
No. I think on this one it's going to.
So we're not going to make any decisions right now on this. We need to get some more information. I think we have to go back to our agencies and go ahead and put something together, and then you can come back to maybe another FPOM special meeting, or the next meeting is next month. We can talk about it some more. But
well, as far as
sit here and talk
relaxing the criteria, that can be talked about right
we
can, now.
Yeah, we're not going to relax the criteria at the AFF. That's set.
So that part of it's
you
out.
You need to go deal with that as well with your agency. And
do you guys have a copy of that criteria?
The harvest, no, guys.
Yes.
Okay, you guys have the criteria, temperature criteria.
The protocol for the adult fish.
It's in the fish passage plan.
We're going to support you as much as we can.
Yeah.
As far as getting this done, but the AFF does have some strict protocols that we need to follow.
Yeah, and I'll talk with our harvest folks some more about this control issue and you know, how we would view the data if it came in as proposed. I think there are some questions there. And I think you guys, with our help, can look at other alternatives for control groups. And I think it's worth trying. If it doesn't pan out, then you end up going to hatcheries or whatever, then you have to. But if we can make that work, you know, I thought about active tag too, but the problem is, and that would reduce the number of fish you have to tag. If we and if you started next year, we would have an active tag study going in the river anyway, so you could piggyback on top of that study, which could save you significant money as well as handling efforts. But you still have the same issue of having to tag the fish at Bonneville, pick it up, haul it down the river, and re-release it.
Well, no, you wouldn't. You just tag them all right there in the net and see how far they made it, right? Couldn't you do a survival study just based on active tags from fish tagged in the net? You don't need a control group.
Well, I wondered about that, too. I mean, I said the same thing, Nathan, and then people said, oh, no, you got to have a control. It's like, well, okay.
We don't know what that's what we're talking about.
What are you comparing it to?
Yeah.
All right, hold on a minute. I want to hear what Dave has to say.
Just a couple of comments I wanted to add. First off, my agency supports the need for this information. But we also have the same concerns as NOAA Fisheries has elucidated today. A couple of things that came to mind as I read through your proposal. I think the point that was made earlier, and I just wanted to reiterate, you know, you didn't state in here what kind of a difference or what your mortality difference was, what the power of your test was, what you're trying to determine. All that really needs to be clear for somebody to be able, at least in this arena, to be able to bless it. At least that's what we do with the SRWG projects.
Right.
20% power for a 2% difference, a 90% power for a 1%, you know, whatever it is. What is going to satisfy your needs needs to be laid out, and that will determine how many fish you're going to need. The other thing, I'm just curious, and you probably looked at this from the 2010 study, how many previously pit-tagged fish did you encounter? And I assume you filed the proper recapture files with the Patagas database. Is that a problem for the existing studies out there if you're intercepting? I don't think you are, but it would be nice to have some information on the number of existing tagged fish that are out there for other studies you're encountering, you're intercepting.
Well, that would help for the control.
Yeah.
So in 2010, we did not tag any fish. We didn't sample anything. We didn't take sex links. All it was stock comp and mark disposition.
So you didn't check for tags?
In 2010, no, we didn't. In 2009, we had a small tagging study where we fished three pieces of gear, one purse, one beach seine, and one trap net. Those fish were jaw tagged, double Floyd tagged, Chinook were pit tagged, and we encountered no previously tagged Chinook in that first year. Now, granted, that was a very small sample size. All told, there was only 800 tags put out between Coho and Chinook. We also handled steelhead, and we didn't find any tag recoveries in those either.
And the 2010 study was really the first time we put a lot of gear out there.
Yeah.
And our real goal was, can we even catch the fish? Does the gear even work? And that was really that intention.
You said you caught 20,000 fish in 2010, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so none of those were tagged? Or
We didn't want them or any of that.
We were just, all we were doing was dipping the fish over the side of the net because we were trying to see if they could even catch fish.
And I can't speak to the specific impacts, but I know in the FPAC group where I represent the service, we do review different studies, separation by code things like that, to determine if those studies are going to impact ongoing pit tag studies to make sure we don't have overlapping, conflicting needs. And I do know that the CSS work, any CSS fish that are handled in the river due to fisheries, you know, even catch and release or whatever, those are taken out of the study immediately. So you handled, I don't know how many steelhead, which are now being looked at, depending on where they came from, you might have had some part of the CSS. It's just something to think about, that if you can put some numbers to this kind of impact, somebody's going to ask it when they start seeing the number of impacted fish you're going to be handling, and they're going to want to know. It's just something to think about.
Well, yeah, I think what I read in here was that any fish that were previously tagged that you detect, you're going to caught a clip and release, and so that would be an impact that other folks would want.
Well, like I said, if it's a CSS, under any circumstances, if you recover a previously tagged pit tag, you're supposed to be obligated to send in a recovery file. And that's the way the CSS study eliminates fish that have been handled, because they're looking for non-handled fish for their study. I don't know how many that would be, but...
And we would do that... At least the mortality piece of it.
It's just I didn't see much reference to any of that in here, and that's something that I think needs to be addressed.
That's something I read in here that you were going to do that, so it sounds like it's, or at least you wouldn't double tag a fish.
Right, I read you wouldn't double tag a fish.
But as far as reporting it, assume you were going to report.
Yeah, they'd be reported at least like a bi-monthly type thing.
So that folks processing the other studies will know what happened.
Well, I looked at this 20,000 number and I thought, how many of those were previously pit tagged? How many made it to the dam? And how many made it above the dam? But you didn't check, so I don't know.
When you guys did check, you didn't find any pit tag fish. You said that was 800 fish. What kind of fish was that? Was that Chinook?
So those were Chinook, Coho, and Steelhead, and okay. I believe there was one pink and two chum or something like that in 2009.
Okay. What kind of detector are you guys using?
We're just using the handheld Allflex.
The Allflex?
Yeah.
You guys might want to look into using the cheese block detector. Those Allflexes have some serious issues.
Yeah, and with this mortality study, we would go with the cheese block just for the lack of interference mm-hmm. and the detectability advantages that you get that way, and data storage.
Especially considering the potential to double tag somebody's fish and ruin all their data, because once mm-hmm. you double tag, they don't get any information back on that. So
collision.
Yeah, collision mm-hmm. happens.
Yeah, and we'd use the Alltech for the fisheries and those kind of places. That's what we have, and that's what we're equipped with. So
for fisheries, right?
Yeah, for the fisheries, commercial yeah. fisheries, and those kind of things. But yeah, like he said, you know, for the mortality piece and tagging them, we'd use the other one.
I still think there's potential for pit, for benign pit.
Yeah.
Well, we'd work that way for sure. The challenge is, again, the precision expectations.
You got to get your statisticians looking at it. Yes,
that's folks set up.
There's unknowns. I know there's unknowns here, but I think it's worth grasping that if you get a better control group out of it.
We'll go back and look at that. Look at pit tag rates and how many fish are pit tagged and how many fish
we
actually.
Yeah, look at Bonneville pit tag detection.
What we think we could actually handle with the pit tag. We'll look at that. I think we're going to need some kind of additional.
You're going to have to handle and tag fish at your trap. There's no doubt about that at the net. I mean, those would be because you're not catching enough anyway. So you would handle and tag those fish, but you know the fish that are in the river. Look at how many detections there already are at Bonneville. That's the number of fish that would be your control group. I mean, those upriver ones.
Well, if we could, the other piece would be we assume there's no mortality between where we fish in Bonneville. And
well, yeah, or you're looking at latent mortality from Bonneville to McNary, or Bonneville to a terminal fishery. So that's what you're looking at here. You wouldn't be getting that piece from your. But if you think it's that bad, then we got a problem with the fishery. I don't think it's that bad. I don't think you think it's that bad.
No.
So I think you're going to see it further up the river.
All I want is something that at the end of the day, I don't have people telling me I had a flawed study and I had a bad study and I
don't
trust your numbers.
We want to work
with
that.
That's all I'm looking for.
Absolutely.
And if there's a way to do that, there's a way to do that. Right now, this is the best way we can see to get the precision that people are expecting of us right now. Now, if there's some loosening on some of those,
it's a balance. You know, there's a balance here. I think we need to look at that balance.
Do we need a subgroup on this one? Or
I don't think so. I'd like to have one more comment, then wrap this up, and then you guys can we'll take a break. You can get your gear packed up, and then get on with the agenda. Last comment.
I'm sorry, Pat. I don't remember, because I just don't remember.
We heard about that earlier.
I forget you already mentioned it.
I forgot I mentioned it.
Is this Pat?
Dan Rodding's study of a year or two ago, I can't remember, where he tested the different tagging wanding effectiveness. Mm-hmm. Did he use an Alltech detector or not, or was it all the cheese block? You might look there and
he
see.
He did both. He did the handheld Allflex.
So you've got some numbers to back up with looking
at that.
That's all I wanted to make sure you were looking at that. Okay,
so you guys are going to take it back and look at some of the things we discussed. Once again, the AFF is going to be strict on the protocols we have in place. And when you get something new, you can ship it back to us.
Well, wait. Does it come back here? I mean, that's O&M is really the responsibility for O&M is the AFF. And beyond that, it's really more of a, it's whatever study review process you want to go through. But. Who's funding this? Is this BPA or is this?
Right now, we are going to ask BPA to fund that, and that's part of where we will be going. Right now, we have set aside dollars from Mitchell-Ack funds to fund this year to make sure that we get it done this year because we don't know if we'll be able to get.
Well, I think getting it done is important. So we'll be talking some more then about methods. I've talked with our harvest folks. I've talked with my upper management. So. They, in fact, some of these ideas I'm just reflecting from them. So we'll have some more discussions on that. But I don't know that it needs to come back here again unless, you guys want to push a little harder. But some of us are kind of hard to push.
And we will be submitting something to BPA for ISRP review and that kind of thing.
You may have missed the boat already for this year.
We may have. That's why we put the NOAA dollars aside that we had for that, in case we will still continue to have discussions with BPA to see if they can find
what
it this
ballpark
year.
Is this one?
Huh?
What's the price tag on this one?
Is it what? It's $750,000 to $1 million, somewhere in there.
A lot cheaper though when you cut the number of fish in half, right? That you have today.
No, because you got to go catch them.
I know.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you guys coming and presenting this to us. I think it's time we take a 5-minute break here. You guys can pack up your gear. If you guys. Not pack up and go, but.
Get out of here!
You're welcome to stay around, but I'm very direct, by the way.
No.
So, break time.
You're okay. Earn a treat here. Have a treat.
Yeah. Have to decipher which one's the treat.
This is good stuff.
That's, yeah.
It's kind of.
Did you try the other one? That was an experimental recipe.
No, it's got some green in it.
No,
it's colored sugar.
Nothing with green. I don't care. It's green. It's probably good for you. I don't want good for me stuff.
Try a small piece and tell me what you think. If you don't like it, be honest, because I don't like it.
I saw it.
You need to file something.
Might want to wash it down with a little bit.
I've had a couple people at the house yesterday, and they loved it. And I thought, that's crazy, that's disgusting. But I'll take it to Epcot and see what we
do. I didn't think it was disgusting, but I thought the texture was.
The texture is odd. Yeah, Ann, what do you think of it?
Flavor is good, but stuff.
I don't think flavor is good. That color is mealy.
I wish I could tell you what was in it.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's got to have, yeah.
No, it's
on. Right.
I wish I could show you what's in it.
I think that one had orange and banana. And when you review the Epcot meeting, we can discuss this all over. I have no thoughts.
I think you were trying to get me to eat that, so I couldn't talk.
That's a good idea.
No, I wanted to
gum you up. Sorry.
People take it home.
I like that. Wow. Native and what? Needed?
Native and needed.
Where's Tackley? Does Tackley have one of those?
No, but I know where to get it.
Where'd you get it? Really?
Yeah, they made up all these.
Nice.
He doesn't have one. He's the buy. He's the chief of fisheries.
No kidding.
You gotta go to the visitor center once.
I'm gonna go there today and buy some stuff.
The chief of fisheries doesn't know about this.
Yeah. Yeah. You think the fisheries officer would want to review what we're selling? It.
Yeah. They don't want everything by you. Maybe it was. Maybe it was.
That is funny that they wouldn't.
So I did get a call back from
Sean that are some things in the lampway. You know they don't.
Hey, they're not making any cut on this. I mean, who's smiling there? So I did. Sean Askelson, I texted him. I said, hey, you know, give me what you want. He said, so he looked at the model really quick. He recommends putting 1A on 70. Okay, don't bottom it out. Put it on 70. And 1B can be put on 70. That operation is good all the way up to 75.5. He says, once we hit 75.5, it starts to slow a little bit up in the upper channel, but it's good all the way up to 76, which we're rarely ever at 76, unless we're... So he said, set 1A at 70, and 1B at 70, and be done with it. Did you get that? Anyway. 1A, 70, 1B, 70. Roger, roger. Over, under. Yeah. So he was going to call the project and do it right now. Yeah, and he said that gets us about 1 point. Yeah, we're on a break. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. So I think that he said that that's good for about 1.2 or 1.3 in the channel full.
Just take a look at it and see. And that's the theoretical. Now it's the Ben implements. They can take a look at it tomorrow and see how things.
I hate allergies. 24 hour Sudafed, all right?
He's feeling fine.
Jacks me up.
Yeah, I've noticed.
You're going to do a few laps around. Hey, why don't you sprint through the park across the street and see if you don't get shot and run back?
Just like
Whoa, make it, let's not get crazy.
That's, yeah, we didn't want to get sick. Thank you for bringing the shirt back.
Speaking of naked.
He left his shirt in my bedroom. Yeah, that's good fodder. It's a Bonneville shirt, huh?
Yeah.
No, I'm not buying mine.
I don't know if they're really.
He's taking a job.
Got a lot of work
in Seattle.
I didn't realize.
His name's Dave Starkle. He's a mechanical.
That's
a structural engineer.
He's
only been here for like 5 years.
Somebody
he took a job in Miami.
In the past, just
up there because they were going to give him like 13/14 there. Yeah. So anyway, and Mark Sokka couldn't guarantee it. He said, "See ya." Well, Mark even it's funny because a while back Mark said, "Well, you know, we're kind of running out of projects, so
but I think
you know,
it's kind of
wouldn't be a bad idea to start looking for jobs." So we kind of took that to heart and started looking. So then we came back to Mark and said, "Hey, I have an offer for a job." What do you mean? Well, you said for me to start looking for jobs. Oh, I didn't really mean that. We're gonna. You know, it's like totally like recanting the story. Dave's like, that's a bunch of crap.
I don't know.
Exactly. So he hates to leave because he really likes it here and he has family.
He
said he can't pass up.
Well, it doesn't work.
It's
100% mortality.
Okay, so then anything they can off that scale on the back.
Yeah.
But if you start with the harvest rate up, because you know less or more benign, then how far can you get?
Oh, no, it's a, yeah. But it's good because, see, people can't just plow through it. It's going to make a few rounds. People take a little chunk here and there. How's everybody? The fam?
You've got 100%
right
now. You want to get it down as low as possible.
And be more efficient.
Right. They've got a rough estimate of 10 years, which is 14%.
There you go.
That's a lot less than
100%.
Do they have any glimmer of an idea about getting there that slightly? So,
welcome to paying your own bills.
How about your own question?
You guys got to give us some bar to get
a senior. Are you a senior?
Otherwise, you have to tag 1,000 people. 100,000
people.
Yeah.
Okay.
that's good.
That's what I said. That's what we had the aspirations for. He didn't tell it.
What is a what level of burnout is the level you're concerned
with? I'm thinking Everest College.
You asked that question, I thought, and he said none. I went back and I thought, it says 20,000, right? I know.
So, you know, you could probably bring up to AMPM mini mart application, where you'd like to start and start fighting people for jobs that have qualifications that are
working. Detected at bottom.
Is he going to move out? Is he said he's moving out?
Correct.
Or you've told him?
It's already 10. So you don't tag. You don't have to put anything in longer than just.
So what does the other half support you in this, or is kind of like? Exactly. That's the big thing. Is like, you know, I had the same issue. Not same issue, but it's hard because you being a step parent, there's always that. It's not my kid, and I love that. But I will draw the line, making sure. That
get your sugar. Get your sugar together.
So when did you buy that camera?
I bought it from somebody off Craigslist. She got it as a.
But I can't tell you to take it back and get the other one.
Oh, no, I can't.
You want the eye.
It's actually a.
Here, pass it over.
What's there to the eye and like a.
It's a.
5 megapixels.
This one's 10.2.
Much better sensing.
10.2.
Yeah.
The eye is 18.
Okay.
I know.
That's right.
It's the. What's the price difference?
Yeah.
Oh, there's no way.
What?
My agency. No, wait, that's the whole cost of guy. Is 800.
Right, I think that's what he's saying.
Oh, what's the difference?
Yeah.
I thought you said what's the difference.
Bye, gentlemen.
I got this one.
Thanks,
like,
you.
Thanks,
guys.
Thanks. Brand new.
Thanks.
Bye. I figured for the body, there's a lot of information. There. She bought it. She bought the eye.
Almost identical.
The,
there's like a and, yeah, it's actually kind of very worthwhile information.
Parents
to have.
Well,
that's
no fisheries has to decide.
How much of a fishery do
you have?
Yeah.
With the lens.
Yeah, I've got right now.
It's 100%.
And I've got a T1 bar.
I mean, in the gilded fishery.
Bring it back on.
Can I get that?
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's start it up again.
Gary, I'll hit the button.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Okay, we're back.
We're live.
At least a month.
Back to you, Bern.
Back to me. All right, so that was our first research update.
Bern, can I interject one quick thing? Over break, I was able to talk to Sean Askelson about the B1 sluiceway recommendations. And so we do have a recommendation from Sean, and I think Tammy already has it in the notes, but he said that we could lower 1A to 70 feet and 1B to 70 feet, and it would perform fine all the way up to 75.5. So at this time, Ben is making it so.
Okay, great.
There's action.
What was that?
It's
that elevation again?
70.
70, so both at 70.
Both gates at 70. 1A and 1B, 70 feet. Rip roaring at the south.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, so as we start up, we've got the request to trap adult lamprey. Before we get there, we've got somebody joining us. Do you want to introduce yourself? In case
yeah, my name is Brian McElraith, and I'm with Critfic. I'm their lamprey guy.
Lamprey guru.
All
right, well, I'll welcome you to the pond. So what's this first?
So the next.
I don't even know
where
we are.
Okay.
Hey, Tammy, before you start, this is Tom Lors.
Tom.
And I'm so sorry that Flynn's sick that I couldn't be there for that delightful discussion on trapping in person.
Mac and Flynn both.
I've got Mac was earlier this week and I got Flynn today.
Oh boy!
So bring him in.
Thanks. So I'll be around about 12:30. So if you have anything of huge importance, let me know. Or
bless you, Tom.
Bring lunch, Tom. Lunch for everybody.
Yeah, I'll be sure to get that right on that.
So you're at your cell phone number.
I'll have my cell phone. I'm at my office right now, but I'll be there until about 12:30. And then.
Tom, did you hear the discussion with Washington on the fishery, harvest fishery issue?
Yes, I did, and I've. Our stance really is we don't think we can help them out with our time in the AFF, so they're going to have to get the okay to get extra time, which I heard you guys are so excited about. And
I'm sure you're not either.
If they are going to do some alternative gear work, that kind of stuff, they do need an evaluation needs to be done, and what that is needs up for debate.
Did you hear that alternative I threw out? I'll call you.
Well, you had several you were throwing out there, and I have a couple ideas that could maybe work.
Rapid fire. Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah. Okay.
I'll talk to you. And I think one thing, we need to encourage them to wand all their fish just so they can do a better job of determining the tags previously. And
okay.
That would
help
a lot.
Well, Tom, you should have spoke up while you were we were going over that. I wish you would have.
Well, what am I going to say differently? I mean...
All right,
we're going to be reviewing this one for a while.
Okay, well, let's get on with the
Frederick shouldn't let him have a word in edgewise.
Capture that the inner tribe yeah, wants, supports wanding all fish.
Moving on.
All right.
I heard that.
So,
I just want to add in that I was going to make comments, but Gary covered most things I'd say. The only thing I'd add is that just because a previous study has been published in a peer-reviewed journal doesn't mean that...
Right.
Well, I don't think that's what
they
he
go
said.
That far. No.
Is yeah. Well, thanks,
that's
Russ.
One thing I would add is that Gary did.
Okay.
Okay.
I was thinking it.
Well, since we're polling the phone, is Rick Krueger there to make any statements? He's still there, Rick, or I can't remember if you're there or not.
I think really the last gone. One was
yeah,
on.
Oh, he's back. I'm coming gone. We noticed. Yeah.
You're Eugene.
Sorry about that.
Taco Del Mar now.
Yeah, right. No, I don't have anything to add. I concur with the concerns that have been expressed, and I agree that we're not going to be relaxing our criteria for the AFF.
Okay, thanks.
Well, thanks for hanging in there on the phone. I know it's kind of tough to hear. But
you in California yet?
No, just past Eugene.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, should have stopped for lunch.
All right. Okay, so can we move on now? We've got some research updates that Tammy's going to
The next four research updates, these are just updates so you know what researchers are out on the projects. We have written approval letters for access for Umatilla Tribe to collect their lamprey, for University of Idaho to collect dead juvenile lamprey. They had originally wanted to... also kill juvenile lamprey, but we said no. NOAA's collection of yearling and sub-yearling chinook and coho, which is something that they've been doing over multiple years. And then ODFW, they're doing the pike minnow. They're still doing their boat electroshocking, but they are also going to be doing some dam angling at the Dalles and John Day.
And WDFW is actually doing the pike minnow, and ODF
that's
doing the bass.
The bass, sorry.
The bass.
Bass sampling.
So, kill them all. So with that being said, we went and I think about a month ago we started looking at ODF's protocol for collection of fish and shocking. Did you see some of this email flying back, Gary?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. About how many fish were being impacted for a very small...
Where's Oregon at?
Oregon's on the phone.
I'm on the phone.
It was impressive.
It was impressive. Yeah,
specifically, well, John Day, wasn't it?
John Day was off the scale.
Yeah.
Okay, well, all I can tell you is that we will be working with BPA on a new pike minnow program biological opinion, and those data will be considered.
Well, what about the...
Whoever's speaking, I can't hear you.
Sorry.
And you know it's Fredericks.
What? It was sarcastic and
he's in a car. He can't hear anything anyway.
But what I'm saying, the NOAA had an opinion, and NOAA issued permits for
here.
That.
Yes, they did.
For that.
For 10 years.
Yes, but I mean, they need to be reviewed, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to review the permits.
Well, the biop. If we write a biop, that will
address
this. So. So noted.
Okay.
I haven't, but we will be talking. My response is that it is what it is. We know that, and we'll stay that way until we get through with a new opinion, and I don't know if we'll change after that. But there's certainly, and those are mostly juvenile, you know, observed, but probably not more. It's what they are take. So.
All right, one last comment for me.
Hey, I'm going to go to you, buddy.
Just calm down.
Is the specific detailed list of the fish that are caught, the numbers somewhere to be looked at?
Yes, Tammy. Tammy sent those out.
You the latest report.
Are they archived on the anywhere?
I haven't posted them to the web. They come from ODFW. I'm not sure where they put them, but I get them in the email. I can start posting them with the
monthly. I'm just wondering.
Update.
It might be useful to have a website. Information storage someplace.
FPOM website is our clearinghouse for everything.
I mean, so. If this becomes an issue, it would be nice to be able to go look at the information.
Well, they have the information. I mean, you can go to ODFW and get that information, or BPA, too. So.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Where is it?
You're in the box.
We could always put a link to that.
I propose that Nathan Zorich be the handler for all this information.
Okay.
What was that, Rick?
I'm hardly hearing a thing from anybody.
Well, really? Stop and here. How's that?
Consider yourself blessed.
This is the same configuration, so I don't know what's different.
We're gonna have to pull over and listen.
It's probably more of his phone than this.
You know, you're sounding pretty loud for some reason.
Okay. He turned up his volume.
There we go. Oh, we're getting road noise.
I have not even thought of
that. Rick, we can hear your tires spinning.
Your buttons
it's lifting off.
Okay.
Anything else?
No, that's it for me.
All right,
me.
Now for the moment you've all been waiting for, it's the Walla Walla Turbine Water Cooling Strainer Update.
Which I'm not going to give.
There you go,
but
Bill.
The one thing Good I turn. Was going to mention about it is one thing of note at Ice Harbor on the 19th of April, there was an adult lamprey located in the cooling water strainer.
Escalation.
Hence, not a strainer.
Yeah, see, that's like a thousand. So they was talking with...
You want to hear about it? I'm just highlighting for you that on the 19th of April... At Ice Harbor, an adult lamprey was found in the cooling water strainer.
The plot thickens.
And of other, the secondary note was that all projects in the Walla Walla district had at least 100 juvenile lamprey recovered from cooling water strainers in April. So
when you say recovered, it's usually dead, right?
Usually
everything's dead.
Okay. Not always dead. And if you want more information, there's a paper that I have posted to the
post
website.
Post it to the website.
That you can look at.
I will.
That I will not talk about in more detail at this point.
Thank you.
So, Ice Harbor. Okay.
Great. Nice update.
Just a quick update for you on transportation and juvenile collection numbers on the snake. As I think everyone's aware, we started collection for transport at Lower Granite on May 1, and then the first barge left then the following day, May 2nd. So the first barge left Lower Granite May 2nd, Little Goose, first one left on May 6th, and Lomo, the first one left on May 9th. So as scheduled, that's what happened. Just for your information, at Lower Granite, these numbers are definitely going up. Today was a big day. I just got an email this morning. 367,000 juveniles collected for transport today at Lower Granite. So that's obviously with a lot of spill going on in RSW. So this is maybe the peak day that we've had so far. But the numbers I have in front of me were assembled on May 9. So they're already a little old. But as of May 9, Lower Granite had collected about 2.8 million smolts or juveniles, and then transported about a million of those. So about 37% of collected fish have been transported to date at Granite. Those numbers for last year, we were at like 570,000 total collected at Granite. So 570,000 by that date last year, 2.8 million this year. So clearly, and it's not a surprise to anyone, flows are up, fish are moving out. And so that's the transport update.
I have a question on that.
Yep.
Of the total number of fish going through Lower Granite, what proportion are collected at Lower Granite?
Spill efficiency.
Yeah, it's...
Go to the FPC site.
No,
fish, it's about, and if you just grossly estimate it, it's about 30% on a daily basis.
You'd have to do a model.
And there's...
So they collect 30% and then they barge 30% of what they collect?
No.
No,
100%. Barge all.
Okay. What you collect, it can vary from 20% of the total fish passing through a day to 30%.
It depends on spill efficiency and those who go through turbines.
Depends.
FGE. Spill efficiency and FGE.
But of those that we collect, in April, we transport like zero of them. Mm-hmm. But now that we're in transport mode, we're transporting 100% of what we collect, which is at Lower Granite, it's about, you know, get roughly 30% of the fish that pass Granite are collected and loaded onto a barge.
So why do you guys collect them in April if you don't barge them?
They just eat them. That's just a big, big grinding mill.
No,
the bypass system.
Place to keep them they're not held.
Yeah, I've wondered about that too. The term is wrong, really. They're passed.
Anytime they enter the bypass system, they're considered collected. Yeah, so they enter the bypass system and go right back to the river.
The term just doesn't sound right.
Yeah. It's collected. They're not a good term.
Collect the other.
Not held in barge.
They enter the bypass system.
Not charged.
It is bypass.
Right.
Okay.
So. Got it.
Lost in that.
Correct the term.
Correct the term. We can get lost in that one.
Yeah.
But it's not.
It's not a good term.
Okay. 3.2.
Has turned the corner.
When he comes back, we're going to have to tell him he's becoming a laughing stock.
Yeah. I'm passing.
3.23, McNary, line outage. This is actually also on the agenda at 6.6. So I guess we'll cover it under the coordination forms. Skip it for now. Number four, Ice Harbor, Kokanee / Sockeye. I mean, really, it's not / Sockeye this time of year. It's Kokanee / Kokanee. And however, we have our take permit for Ice Harbor, and you know, bottom.
He's back.
I'm doing the conference.
Good. Bottom line is, based on all the outflows from Dworshak and having to create a lot of space in Dworshak to prepare for all the runoff that will get into Dworshak, a lot of water has been drawn out of Dworshak. A lot of it's been spilled. And when we've done that, we have passed a lot of Kokanee.
This is the SMP take permit that's been exceeded?
Yep.
Never heard of that.
And so, and you guys write that.
We
and
do.
Blaine, yep.
And have you notified?
Yes. So this is just this is an update to let people know that that has been exceeded, and we think that basically all of those fish are fish being flushed out of Dworshak.
Right, but have you talked to us about this
and
specifically?
Yes.
Because that's the important
part. Yeah, we've talked to Bill and Blaine. Blaine's
okay.
Aware of it, and he is... he said he is moving. Said we can move forward with continued monitoring, and he's getting a letter out ASAP.
Okay, good.
So,
good.
But yeah, we actually had thousands of kokanee showing up downstream. That the fishermen were noting thousands of kokanee going past.
Man, interesting. If we get a different sockeye run. I don't know. A couple years.
Yeah, I've wondered the same thing. Okay, 3.25.
That'll be good.
Well, this is not this. This is the same thing that's happened at various times before. We've had over 70 white pelicans hanging out at the outfall at Lomo, and
belly up to the bar.
For some reason, it's they're not. You rarely see them at Goose, and you rarely see them at Ice, but Lomo, they're just love to hang out.
Where?
Right at the outfall.
Let's get that. You got to move that. Moved.
Good idea. I'm sure the Pelicans will stay right at the old spot.
Yeah. You're just going to have it.
Has there been sampling of pike minnow or bass at the outfall? Just curious. So maybe
in
they're...
Pelican stomachs?
What are they eating? I don't know. They're probably eating smolts.
Good man.
And so, I think it was last year that there was some confusion with our bird hazers. Yeah, well, it wasn't a lot of confusion. It was Washington had said, white pelicans are listed on a state list. And no hazing.
Right.
Well, we got that issue resolved last year so that we could, in fact, haze pelicans, obviously non-lethal, but our normal hazing program. And that's continuing this year. We're continuing to haze those pelicans.
The conference.
And obviously that should...
Let's text him and tell him to stop. Say, stop it.
And now that we're transporting... I would anticipate this to stop.
Over. Yeah.
So they're being recorded.
Except for pit tags.
Oh yeah.
They're rerouted back to the.
That's room. A good point, Bill. That'd be maybe just
still
feasting
on pit
tags. Yeah, I'm bringing it up so that you are aware when you're looking at studies for 2010, if they're happening in April, and the first week of May, there could our survival through that outfall. Could be lower. I mean,
how has the hazing worked?
It. My understanding is it's effective when the hazers are there, but I mean, as they're driving off, they
pelicans roll right in,
roll in back in.
Let's get the middle feather.
Yeah,
they're not kind of goals.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
So that's the Lomo pelican update.
Well, that's what's going on.
So Tim, are you suggesting a spill pattern change?
Actually, we are for this coming fall and winter. We look forward to delving into that. And Bill is
we looked at
pelican
all patterns at Erdick and
going for a pee-pee.
Whenever you're spilling whatever pattern, the flow at that old outfall is bad. It's poor the dispersion. The only time it gets good is when you don't have any spill at all.
Everything's going to the powerhouse.
That's an option. Yeah.
That's what it was designed for.
Only the powerhouse option.
Yeah, that's what it was designed for.
You've got
for,
good dispersion at that
fire cannons?
Our water supply.
Yeah. Save the old
really. So it'll obviously be changed when we have a new outfall next year.
But for now.
They don't
have, there's no avian cannon on there now?
Yeah. No, there is. Okay. There's a small...
shower.
Sprinkler.
Squirt.
It
cleans them off.
It's called a
burn bath. Yeah, a little water with the food.
Lightly refreshes them as they dine.
All right.
Okay. 3.26. This is one that can really get pushed out to August as an action item because this is the SOP or standing operating procedure for RSWs is really what we're looking at, and it's not going to impact anything that we do when RSWs are in operation. It has everything to do about when you rock the RSW back and then reattach it, how you make sure that there's no debris getting wedged in.
Tim, wasn't there also concern about really high flows and what you do with the RSW and where that trigger was? Are we going to look at that?
Re-look at it because it has been looked at.
I thought that was a concern. If they had to take it out of the way because of a high flow event, what do you do then?
That's one that I haven't really drilled into that, Scott.
Was it more of a... flow issue as to when you could or could not just put it in that
right, if you
could
bring
partial
it back up
spot.
Or not. right? Yeah. There's either the halfway hanging point or sink it all the way.
Yeah. Well, that halfway hanging point, sink it all the way, is all about when they're doing maintenance on it.
But during
high flows, that's a no-brainer. You have to sink it all the way.
Okay, like I said. But then how do you get it back? Or do you not until the flows go way down?
That's something that I believe there is an answer to that question. I just, I don't know it.
That was resolved, I thought, before when you put it way back.
Yeah, no, there is a procedure on that. The part that's being updated is when we're doing maintenance on it and bringing it back into its operating position. How do you make sure you don't screw things up by getting debris lodged in when you're anchoring it into its operating position? So that's the part that's being worked on. But frankly, it's a priority, but it's kind of low priority at this point in the season. I certainly know we need to work on it so that we're in place for this winter. So we can put it as an action item and bring it back in August.
Tim,
yeah.
Hate to do this. Can I just go back for a second? I have a question, maybe more for the FFU, but I'm just wondering, is anyone looking at like American white pelicans more basin-wide and like, you know, are they just moving around?
Yeah, Roby's group monitors the colonies and where they're at. Yeah, they are moving around.
Did they get the CORES numbers for
sightings? Yeah, I mean, the only spot we really see them is below John Day. They hang out on the Dredge Islands there a little bit.
Badger Island's still the only, not the only breeding colony, because now we have one down the estuary. But
right. The numbers are drawing, that's a whole other story.
Okay.
Things are changing.
Surprise.
Okay. I'm going to move on to 3.27, and this is we've scratched what was there and replaced it with a little goose update. So there's not a low mode debris incident to report on. That was brief last month.
That was.
But I'm going to replace it with a little goose update. And that is just this morning as I was getting ready to leave the hotel, I got an email and just had enough time to go print it off and read it on my way walking here. Bottom line was there were 70 yearling Chinook juvenile mortalities that occurred at Little Goose in the middle of the night last night. Apparently what happened, there was a night shift biotech who overlooked the fact that a closed sliding gate in the raceway loading flume wasn't opened when they moved from direct barge loading to raceway loading. That caused water to overflow, and when water overflows, you get fish to overflow with it, and 70 yearling juvenile Chinook landed on the ground, and by the time they found it after about 10 minutes, it was about 10 minutes of time where water was overtopping, found it, quickly opened the gate, went and made sure everything was up and running, and then went back with flashlights trying to look around, and then this morning we're able to get the final count of 70. 60 of those were clipped, 10 unclipped, and that's the update. So, and yeah, I still have to give division a call on this one. So you're at least hearing it. This is what happened. And the biotech, I guess, was feeling terrible. He knew it was, he'd been trained on what to do, and he just made an error. So that is what it is.
Arguable.
Yeah.
You got an opening.
Is she still working there?
No, we're sending Hurston out there. Take
care
of
him. That'll do it. You should.
Yeah. So, and then.
He would want to be.
That was part A of the Little Goose update. Part B of the Little Goose update is it's completely different, but it's at Little Goose. And that is, it's somewhat related to the 6.7 coordination form, which I won't get into that coordination form now, but I at least want to bring up that this coordination form is all about doing work in August, which will result in a total powerhouse outage. Mm-hmm. that's the coordination form and doing work on the T1 transformer ISO phase bus seal repair. Okay, that's still planned, and that's in August. The reason why we need to do that in August is because there's a leaky, basically the transformer is not watertight, and water's leaking in. And the reason why the project needs to go fix it is because the transformer, I don't, help me with some language here, Scott, but if that goes out, then you have a major problem. We had a temporary problem that just happened Tuesday, and that is project did an emergency line outage on Tuesday to inspect a high voltage bushing, which had developed a slight oil drip, and there was which resulted in a complete line one, so turbine units 1 to 4 line outage from 11 a.m. on Tuesday, just 2 days ago, until about 3:45. So about almost 5 hours where we had a lot of spill. So I'm pointing this out, one, so that you're aware that we weren't passing flow through those turbine units. We were spilling a lot more of the river than was expected in the fish passage plan and in the FOP. So I wanted you to be aware of that. And also, when you go look at adult fish numbers, there was a dip in adult fish passage at Little Goose, like you would expect to happen when turbine units 1 through 4 go out. And so that did happen, and it really underscores the importance of getting this powerhouse outage in early August, which is the coordination form that we'll talk about later. And so, because the project folks know that this is a risk of repeating itself, and the goal is to get on and fix it before we're really in trouble, where we could have a powerhouse outage for a long time. So we're hoping to keep things on track and fix the problem in early August, which is, in order to do this repair, you need it hot and dry. And so we're picking a hot, dry time, which provides it with the best window with adult fish passage.
Plan it during the Walla Walla Fitterwing. It'll be hot and dry.
So anyway, we can get to that coordination form when we get to that spot on the agenda, but I wanted you to be aware of the powerhouse outage that occurred on Tuesday. And that's it for Walla Walla updates.
Any questions?
Has joined the conference.
Is it Rick again? Did somebody just join?
That's Rick.
Kruger. I keep getting dropped.
We noticed.
You will out there.
I'm just passing Rice Hill now.
Yeah, that's a bad area, all the way through Roseburg.
Yeah. So what came of the Pelican to Slomo outfall? I got dropped right as that started.
The Corps shot them all.
All right!
Now, there were about 70 Pelicans hanging out. We were hazing them, and now we're transporting from Lomo. The problem should be much less, but wanted folks to be aware that for several weeks,
for future,
yeah,
until the outfall's moved, this will be an issue.
Yep.
Maybe even after us.
Yeah, probably.
They gotta eat somewhere.
Yeah.
Hey Tim, this is Russ.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be sure and keep an eye on it, because we still will be bypassing the Pentag Van River survival estimate fish.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So we don't want to have a extra hit on those guys.
No, it happened. Totally aware of that. So I mean, the hazes will continue to haze
all day long.
All day long.
16 hours.
You know what? I know that's true at Granite. I guess I'm not 100% sure of the number.
I'm pretty sure that it's not.
Yeah, I wonder if you can move somebody up there.
I don't remember who I was talking to, but oh, I know it was the. No, this was in regard to 2009 or whatever the study was done. But at that time, the Andrews didn't show up there. They weren't around at dawn and dusk, and they didn't show up until 8 or 9, and they were not there that long. So I don't know if things have changed or not, but. It sounded like they were trying to cover multiple projects, and of course they have to cover multiple areas around the project, but it sounds to me like we ought to be trying to get them focused on that outfall a little heavier anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I know it's been the primary focus this spring simply because that's where you're seeing a persistent problem. So
that's with birds, you see it. Yeah. Can you move somebody from one of the other dams to that site and have them double up?
I'll double check on that, Gary.
Maybe granite.
Double check on the doubling up.
Yeah.
Double up. Double check. Okay.
Any other comments? All right, so a couple of Portland updates. The Powerhouse 1 tail race gantry crane is coming into in four pieces, and it'll be assembled on the 55 deck. It's going to require some unit outages to hook up the crane. You got any timeline on this?
This is happening recently.
Oh, this is the tail
July,
race.
End of July, August. Yeah. First week of August. So we've done everything to facilitate having them deliver it instead of having any impacts.
Do you know if this is in the outage schedule yet?
Outage schedule?
When you're going to have units out for this barge placement.
No, there's no barge placement. These are coming in on truck.
Yeah, why is there the unit outage?
There shouldn't
they
be
need a unit outage to hook it up to the power line. I thought they need at least a short outage.
Right. Like for hours?
Don't hook it up to the power line. That's
the
gantry bus.
Yeah, to hook it up there, they had some concern initially about the overhead lines and the units.
I'll investigate with Jim.
For the barging.
Yeah, those were way up.
Yeah.
And it may have just been when they were barging.
Because that's why they had to do it on that side of the powerhouse.
Yeah, I thought that was going to go away.
Yeah, hey, I think it's all going away.
But that's gone away, and the bird wires are okay.
Yeah.
And all those things are fine. So
we asked them to deliver them in smaller pieces and no
impact then at all.
Just putting the four pieces together on the deck.
Right. Just be all right. We'll review that with the project and make sure there's no impacts. The second one is the smoke monitoring facility at John Day is reporting some injuries, an elevated injury rate because of they included the eroded dorsal fin in the injury section. It was a new person, so
John Day.
Yeah, so that's been resolved, but
yeah,
and it was pretty impressive. People noticed, started making phone calls. So good job. Fitterwig updates 3.4.
We have one more. Did you not want to do the Bonneville update regarding?
I didn't write it down.
Which one is
the tie crane?
Oh, didn't even know about it.
Uh-oh.
It's broken.
Little tie crane. Oh, it's
not again. Remind him what you told him this morning.
There is no tie crane. That's it. No, there's a. There is actually not a tie crane. It's there, but it's not functioning for the next probably month and a half. Generator issue that's being replaced.
Diesel. Electrical generator run by diesel.
I'm not sure.
In the crane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean.
So it's.
See, it's not run by power. It's powered by itself. It's a diesel generator.
The lines are there by the spillway, so it's got to have its own power source.
Yeah.
And it's burned up, apparently. Great. So it's too contracting, they figure. 5 or 6 weeks to get it back and installed.
This is the diesel engine on?
Yeah.
Is that the backup crane for the gantry? Or
yes.
Mm-hmm. So there's a chance they could both be done at the same time?
No.
No, that's a different.
That's next year.
Next year.
Okay.
Yeah, it's later.
Different gantry that we just talked about.
Well, maybe we'll get the same one that built the boom.
So what's the impact? Is that anything, though?
Is that an issue? Got his hand slapped.
not a huge issue if we get heavy debris. You know,
you will.
The thing is, time-wise anymore, I don't know that it makes a huge difference.
Okay.
Because okay. our limitations on the tyke right now are so vast that it's not much of an advantage.
Better
to
use the gantry. Okay.
I mean,
okay.
really, we can't
as long
carry
as the gantry
is working. We can't. Yeah. Exactly.
They don't swing them over the parapet wall anymore. So let's pull them up in the slot,
right,
hose them off, and stick them back in.
So really, the only disadvantage is the gantry's got to break the backer VBS in half to move. But
right.
that's basically what the tyke right now has to do too, because they can't walk with it. So it's got to do this stupid thing where it sets it down, moves, picks it back up, swings yeah. around. It's like it's nearly worthless.
Neither one are good.
No.
Okay.
But anyway, that's...
So no real fishery impact?
No, unless there's something that comes up in the next month that requires us to close the corner collector.
Corner collector, yeah.
Well, I think the only other thing, once we start getting really heavy debris, I think we had a scenario where we were using both gantries to try to keep up. Or isn't there a scenario in there where you're using the tie crane and you're using the gantry? Kind of working from
working
both ends to try to...
We haven't, but...
Okay.
Okay, for how long again?
That's
for
not
for two,
MPP.
For a month
it's
or
been
two?
An
oh,
six
oh,
weeks.
Okay. Six. All right.
From...
Then you need two
okay.
crews.
From now to
yeah,
have
from
it
now
back.
Now till mid-June, diet late.
It's
June.
Apparently off, I don't know whose shelf, but
right
off
the
shelf kind of item.
Right over the freshet.
Right.
Perfect.
Right. So it will potentially be a little
did
bit...
Did you change oil on that thing?
I don't know what happened to it.
It's been sitting there for 3-4 years.
I don't know.
Just been sitting there.
I know it has. Yeah, long time.
Exercise and probably.
Rusted.
Just got tired.
Spring Creek update?
Tired and old.
Done, right?
Like me.
Okay. Teletype runs till 5. But
today?
Soft.
Okay.
Just get a new generator.
Yep.
Get
it.
Good. Get her done.
They're rolling. They're good.
Yeah.
All right. Any variants? All right. Fitterwig updates. Fitterwig. Who's our Fitterwig update person?
Do you have anything?
I don't have a lot other than... The issue that's going to come up tomorrow about John Day testing,
right.
that's SRWG. So everything else, we've got, from an acoustic release standpoint, everything's going smoothly with that. It releases out above John Day. We've been able, I think it just update, we've been able to hit all of our blocks so far.
Yeah,
so Brad put that out. Equipment-wise, I haven't any issues with equipment.
Still be at the Dells.
Yeah.
9-10.
Some wood hit
them
or something?
They had to put those new pipes in.
No. So, what was that? A week and a half ago, we had a transducer that went bad in a pipe that was mounted to the wall, one of the trolley pipes. And so, to mitigate for that, we installed two additional acoustic node pipes off, deployed them off the wall.
Shallow
to get coverage there. And and I got a note back that said it's working well. It's getting the coverage they want.
This is at what? Which
bay
case?
9.
Between,
8 and 9?
Between bay 9 and 10.
9 and 10.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's on the edge.
So if we don't run those bays, which we're not, it's not an issue.
We're not.
If
no.
we do run those bays, which we might.
We still have coverage.
Can we blow those off?
No, no.
They're set up.
No, they're
okay.
set. They're mounted off the wall.
So no limitation
shallow.
On how you
no.
run the project.
There's no deep coverage though, right?
There's not, but they don't feel it. I mean,
as long as you don't run the bays,
deal.
It's probably not going to be an
yeah.
issue.
It's not as important as 8-9.
No, that'd be, yeah, that'd be, or
no.
but
it's eight.
Still, Fenn was saying it's still pretty important.
Yeah.
Overall.
But we've got the coverage back. We were worried about just losing that, you know, even any coverage right there, especially it being
yeah.
a corner where
corner.
It kind of loop
mm-hmm.
around.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got that coverage back.
Okay.
So we're good.
Let's see. John Day North entrance mods, we're currently reviewing the 90% plans and specs comments, and I'm going to be working on a coordination form for 2012-13 in-water work extension, because this construction is going to be spread between 2 years, likely. Let's see, Bonneville Washington Shore entrance flume system, the Lamprey project. Still working on the gravity flow system and that whole alignment. There's actually a coordination form we're going to talk about today for November of 2012 to February 13 in water work for that. The Dalles East AWS backup system. We had a meeting on Monday, and I think we made some progress in terms of talking about various alternatives, given our kind of new target of just keeping the east entrance open in the event we had a failure of both fish units. So, that's out there. I think I forwarded most of the folks in this room the notes from that to those that weren't able to make it. You'll be happy to know that we have now a project manager and a tech lead assigned for the Dalles John Day adult pit detection feasibility study, so that should be starting really shortly.
Great.
Who are they?
Who is PM?
The PM's Bob Vanderborg, and the tech lead is Marie Phillips. So Marie just got the assignment, so that means that we're going to start rolling.
Also.
And what? Again?
Oh, I got one more.
You got one more?
Yeah,
okay.
I got one
more. One thing that I just got a voicemail from Chris Cottle yesterday asking about JSAT's testing. You might remember about 2 months ago they did some in-fishway testing with cabled JSAT systems. So, and the second part of that coordination form was after spill starts, we'd like to go over to the Cascade Island ladder and test it with spill going on to see what kind of detection efficiencies you get when dragging a tag in those areas. So I'm going to follow up with that. I got to touch bases with him on what exactly their setup's going to be for Cascade Island. But you'll probably see some sort of either updated coordination form or an email sent out.
Okay. Got what we said already. Okay.
It might have already been. I can't remember. I could. If you already said that we had no problem.
We were okay with it earlier, but I'm not sure that was with in season. I think we were saying off, preseason, go ahead. But with fish in the river, that's a little different issue.
Right. And I think we deferred it till they were actually ready to do it. So, like I said, I'll work with Chris and figure out what we need to do.
Yeah, I don't think I want him in there with that.
Or maybe off hours or something.
Yeah, off hours at night or something like that. That'd be okay.
But I think that's what we had talked about.
That's what it was. Okay.
All right.
The only other thing, too, is there's been a monumental task of assigning a PM for the B2 trash rake, fish unit trash rake. That's been assigned. So,
Tom, are you listening?
Tom?
Still on my chair.
Okay. So we do have a PM assigned, and he's right now working on getting together budgets and scopes. And then
first job for this guy is to rename this project Lors Memorial Rake.
What did the guy do that he deserves that treatment?
He's a captain in the Army. He was looking for an opportunity.
And we should put Cindy on
Captain Lee.
PDT.
Captain Lee.
Captain Lee.
Yeah, put Cindy on the PDT.
He'll crack the whip.
He will. So we're hoping to move forward fairly quickly with some funds this year.
Good. Finally.
Okay, 20 years.
Good news.
We'll get there.
Come on, quick fitter wig update.
Another fitter wig update.
And I think it was just, Gary, you were already aware of this, but there was our Lamprey team was looking at the entrance to the Oregon Shore ladder at McNary and wanted to lift the bottom leaf gate off the sill to create some attraction flow for lamprey that may be migrating down lower on the river. However, when they were talking to me about it, it looked like to do what they wanted to do required an outage of several days, and it could have been even up to like 2 weeks of one of the adult fishway entrances, and so I think this, my understanding from Fitterwig was this properly got punted to winter maintenance period and looking at making that modification, but in next winter
for next year.
Yep. So
nice call.
Make the mods during the winter maintenance season. And then it's in place for the season.
I believe it was going to be a 2 week.
Yeah.
They thought they could maybe do it a little bit faster, but.
That was the maximum time they needed. It could have been just a couple of days, but. if things went wrong.
So, I mean, the reason they were targeting that entrance was because they think it's, well, we know it's one of the primary entrances adult salmon use, and also think that's maybe where we can get our most gains for lamprey as well. And so, by default, then you're screwing around with a very important entrance.
Yeah, we weren't concerned with doing the work. It was just the outage was the issue.
Yeah. So, well, probably be more to come on that you'll hear about, but it's not going to happen this fish season. It'll be next winter.
Great.
That's
it. So, moving on to the RCC update. Doug, what do you got for us today?
RCC 10-day forecast. The May 11th 24-hour inflows at Lower Granite were 99 kcfs. Day 5 of the forecast at Lower Granite forecasts out to 141 kcfs. And by day 10 of the forecast is 163. Moving to Priest Rapids. May 11th, 24-hour average inflows, 185 kcfs for May 11th. By day 5 of the forecast, increasing up to 198 kcfs. And by day 10 of the forecast, up to 225 kcfs. And then moving downstream to Bonneville.
Head for high ground.
Bonneville, May 10th, 24-hour average inflows, 280 kcfs. By day 5 of the forecast, May 15th, increasing up to 362 kcfs. And by day 10 of the forecast, May 20th, flows increasing up to 434 kcfs.
Did ODFW declare Chum emergence over?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That happens usually when's that early May?
Yeah, that happened. All declared that
on the 10th of May or something. May,
like that? It was in line with the exact same date that came out from the model output.
17.
Good.
Something like that.
Anything else?
That's all I have.
Some worth of that, maybe.
Validated the model there.
That's true. From the lamp break.
I know. Very good. The strainers up there.
Alright, 3.6, Bonneville Power Administration updates from the Fish and Wildlife Administrator.
Yes. They have a request. They want a 1 month outage of the second powerhouse sometime in 2014 or early 2015. So we're kicking around time when that might be appropriate.
August.
Either August or late October, early November.
Cooler, but August typically below 200. And 200 your limit. I looked back several years, and at least in my inspections out there, we were 150, 140, 160, sure. Below 200 because of spill. You get in September, then all of a sudden it flips, and 400 you'd be okay, but right, not at 200. So I'd say August is your best month.
Right.
Then you've got to get into the temperature issue. I don't know how that affects it.
Awesome.
You said in here, the typically warmer, cooler, whatever. How does temperature affect this?
The amount of load that has to go through. So if you get too late into the winter, they need to have generation there.
So it has to do with load, not with some. Right.
October's not bad.
Cooling of transformers or something.
The parts in line, or the line isn't far enough along. August would be a month to shoot for. Then the next window would be the mid-October or October, early November before chum starts.
Yeah,
this is Tom Lord. I think you, just from an adult, if you basically get this powerhouse too, you're talking about shutting off, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You stop all adult sampling. Not that you would be thinking that at all, or Machiavellian of yours would be thinking any of this, but with powerhouse 2 off, there'd be no adult sampling there, so I'm sure there might be some pushback from the TAC crowd.
In August.
August is a good time. Perfect.
Figured. Yeah. So I would go October, and if October comes up as a bad for some reason, then maybe go back to August. I would pick October as your priority first.
The first recommendation I was going to make to him was mid-October until the first 10 days of November. The second one was August. The third one was April in a low flow year.
Mm-hmm. Well, April when the spill first starts. That was the other one I was thinking was April.
if you have a low enough flow year and you can get still plus that, you can maybe squeeze in it. But that's a lot riskier.
That's way riskier.
To plan for a low flow year in advance is
exactly.
Things have changed when we're actually planning for low flow years instead of high flow years.
So that's what I had there. If you guys can think of anything else that we need to add on it, it's down the road. But give you some advance warning. You know, it's about 2014 already.
Hey, Scott.
Yeah.
So why can't we do it during the winter work window?
They need to have more transfer capability through the Willamette Valley to keep the lights on, and so that's why it's been pushed into the lighter load periods. Bonneville is an important hub to move energy up and down the Willamette Valley.
Winter's bad.
Yeah.
Reliability issues.
Does this really take second powerhouse offline
completely?
I didn't see that in here.
Yes. All 230 lines, which is all what
everything
second powerhouse
comes
has.
Yeah, it's all 230.
There's four 115 lines in the first powerhouse, mm-hmm. and all the rest is 230.
Okay.
So the entire second powerhouse goes on.
Okay. Well, that wasn't apparent from this, unless you knew that, I guess. Yeah, in that case, then definitely. There's an issue with August then.
Yeah.
Okay.
This unit's two.
Everything.
Everything's
gone. Yeah.
Everything goes down. Yeah,
that's what I mean. That's why
August
is
out.
Not good.
Nope, gone. Okay. Forget it. Yep.
October's not good either, is it? I mean, you get a bunch of fish passing in
August. We do.
We got B1.
Yeah,
B1's fine.
You could make.
But I'm just saying, fish units.
When it comes down to fallback concerns through P1, but we don't have spills.
No,
so. That's better than.
And you're gonna have
better
more
than
room.
August.
So on those three different windows, this October or mid-October,
yeah,
you got this August and then April. How do you prioritize those? It sounds like October is the first priority.
First choice.
The other question I have: you said it's a month-long outage, and do we have a schedule of what work has to happen in that month?
We're still trying to figure out how to build the line.
Oh, okay. I just wondered it.
I'm working with transmission to give us long lead times on things.
Yeah.
We can chew on them for a long time,
mm-hmm.
then forget about them and remind ourselves later.
Right. That's good.
Given this is a while out, but if you plan for October and it doesn't happen for whatever reason, then what happens to this?
I'm not sure yet. It depends on the schedule. So it may slip a whole year.
Right.
Or it may
okay.
just slip into the open for a low flow in April issue. But my guess is...
But this project is a bigger... I mean, this is a bigger than just an outage of Bonneville project.
Oh, it's building an entire new line up,
right.
up the...
So they're trying mm-hmm. to fit these little pieces together. If all of a sudden, oops, you can't work in at Bonneville in October, what does that mean? That could mean... Yeah, huge
could,
delay.
Could be a delay for a year. It may not.
It's something.
That's why they want to figure out what the important pieces are now to make sure that it doesn't slip on those parts.
Well, yeah, October would be the best time from the sounds of it.
Yes.
Why would that be better in November?
Well, in November you couldn't service the load, and so I don't think the people of Portland and Seattle would care if their lights were off for that month.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're saying that the load increases so much in November that we can't do it then?
Yeah. Right. There's certain times when you can't take chunks of the power system
when
out.
You're down to 400 megawatts, and you're going to be over 400 in November. You always are. Actually, October you're over. Usually 500, 480, 500 is what I noticed.
You can make it in October.
If you push
that.
It, yeah. hold it down.
But the most people don't turn their heaters on. Most of the load doesn't develop until you get, unless it's really, really cold, wet.
Yeah, October's usually pretty good.
Right.
There's your month, and then
yeah.
April's your fallback.
Yeah,
but you're probably a year delayed anyway until the next October.
It could be.
Unless there's some push to happen.
Part of the push for this line is you need to build more lines to service the power that's growing. And so at some point you have to have...
But would they let the entire line construction sit? I mean, they got to be up to a certain point, and then they're going to have to stop if you can't do it in October.
They'll probably get to a point for attachment, right?
Well,
do they just do everything and it's just the hookup?
No, there's a section line they have to take out to go parallel to it, I think is why they need the month-long outage.
Oh, okay.
But
parallel to the original,
yeah.
the existing 230s?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, I guess
a new line.
We got your answer for now, and we'll see more to come.
Yeah,
I guess that's the thing.
This is planning off the horizon, and I'll give you updates as it comes.
We'll forget all about this.
You guys,
I'm sure you will.
You'll have to have a shooting for October is good, but
I didn't say that.
If worse comes to worse, and October is really, really cold, what's the default then? What happens after that? What's the emergency? Do you have to do it?
Right.
What happens after that?
That's what they're studying. They want to know periods that come in and what the implications are. And so I'm really stressing to them that this October window is their best going.
Yeah. Okay.
So thanks for the input.
Well, I'm still concerned. Why is that better than April?
Well, April, you don't know if you're going to have too much flow.
April's flashy.
Too many April 2014. Yeah. And your dissolved gas levels and your impacts to chum downstream.
Yeah, there's lots of issues there.
Well, yeah, but we're going to be. This is going to be on the Steelhead and Coho. What we're talking about. That's when they're passing.
And you still have the.
You still have Powerhouse 1. Yeah. I mean, we're not.
See,
we're
I'd rather have Powerhouse 2 operational in April.
Because
you've got the corner collector. It's just a better, I think, better passer for fish. Than we know a lot more about it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Well, the other thing, too, is you have to have B2 operating when you're operating the corner collector.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you can't do it in April.
You have to shut it down.
Everything or you shut it down. Yeah, shut everything down.
The entire fire has to be shut off, including the corner collector.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's an option for BPA to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's the flow criteria that you're dealing with?
Well, your minimum river flow is 80K.
I know, but what flow would you create problems as far as gas and those type of things?
Well, gas problems usually come up at what's our cap there now? 100 right now? 110?
The Powerhouse 1?
No. The spill
to get into which cap? Chum cap or 120, it's like 150.
It depends on what tailwater is.
Yeah.
So. This is Natalie, has left the conference.
Bye, Natalie.
Yeah.
And so the other problem is you can't, in order to get a tailwater increase, you'd have to spill even more water.
Yeah.
So you'd be right at the minimum for some if it's a drier year.
So, Russ, what, you might want to restate your question.
Yeah, I'd still, one of the things is that, I'd like to do it outside of the adult migration window. And so you're saying that we can't do it in April because it's flashy, but how about mid-March to mid-April before spill season?
March load-wise will be bad.
Yeah,
still cold.
Yeah, I figured that was the wrong. From what you said there, March wouldn't work.
Yeah. I mean, you could do a pro and con from April versus October, and the con list for April is really starting to overcome itself.
There's not a lot of
do that in the latter part of April for sure. Wouldn't be into that. Okay.
That's what happens if you get delayed while you're doing it and you have to extend it. You extend it into periods you don't like. Where at least if you do it in October, you got some buffer into November.
You may have to spill a little bit.
Yeah. It's not the end of the world.
Not the end of the world.
A month, like October, November.
Sure, I mean, that's the October 15th and November 10th.
October is your least risk, the way I see it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it means shifting the powerhouse, but we still have Bradford Island passage. Is still pretty
no juvenile issues. You don't have any chum issues. Right. I mean, you get rid of all the juvenile components.
An adult passage, the only concern I have is fall back to the powerhouse. No screens.
Okay. Right.
But we have this new sluiceway operation. I'll take care of that.
Yes, we do.
I'll get it back on the agenda when there's some update.
Okay.
That way we can start working. I'll tell you now. August.
I didn't say that.
All right.
You know us well. Why do you even start us so early? You know, and I just can't forget.
You can't win in this group. That's the milk.
So, Scott, do you have a foul release coating update, too?
I didn't know I had that.
I can take it off if we're done with it, if it's not going to come back.
It's not
going to
occur. They're going to do it in the Port of Camas. So they found an alternate location.
So let's take it off.
Yeah, take it off.
What is
it? Follow release.
It's very bottom of the page.
Yeah, zebra muscle.
We're doing that test.
I say.
Foghorn Leghorn.
Foul PSU.
Right.
Yes, foul program.
Foul.
That would be foul.
Saw an email this morning that quagga mussels were found in northern Nevada.
Oh.
Closer.
So not the Columbia River Basin, not like very northern Nevada, but it was closer to
only a boat trailer away there.
Is that next?
Yeah.
No.
In what drainage were they in?
Not the Colorado.
The mussels I saw a news release that we detected and did the control measures on two boats on Interstate 90 in northern Idaho. That we're heading our way.
We can move on. When I get this email that I just got this morning, I'll pull it up here. And
so not enough. We caught them, but it's bad that they're coming.
Yeah, they weren't in the.
So how did they take burning their boat?
Sorry, we have to light your boat on fire.
We caught some high pressure, high temperature water.
That's what we put on the internet. So circulating around.
New techniques for cleaning your boat.
Yeah. Gasoline and a match.
Only in Montana. Or Nevada.
Sanitize.
Get their attention. So our next item is 4, Lamprey Accords Work Group. Columbia River Tribal Fish Commission Tribal Lamprey Documents. You guys have a PowerPoint?
So on.
You have a PowerPoint you want to show?
Yeah, I got it.
So we'll drop some of these lights.
So while Brian's getting set up, our next meeting's next Friday, the 20th, so in this Friday. And we're going to be talking about these adult lamprey collection needs, and that's what Brian's little slideshow is going to be about. And we'll also be going over the lamprey related one pagers, the SRWG stuff. So, talking about really discussion of potential priorities and what we want to get done as funding allows. Next Friday is our
next Friday.
Next meeting. This is that core tribal.
Okay, just real quick, initial tests show quagga mussels in Lahontan and Rye Patch in northern Nevada. So they need to do some follow-up valid tests to validate, but they've preliminarily discovered quagga mussels in, which I believe is only like 40 miles south of the Columbia Basin.
Is this a villager or adults on a boat or something?
I think it was villager samples, but these are early preliminary tests. So I believe it's based on villager sampling. So
hopefully we'll be here.
They're coming.
Yeah,
they're gonna be here.
It'll
be here before that.
There's a little, yeah.
So
usually
it's more. Or is
that the lever? That's the focus lever.
Got it.
So I'll keep this this talk relatively brief. I don't want to PowerPoint you guys to death. But my name is Brian McElroy. I work for the Columbia River and Trout Fish Commission, and I work primarily with Lamprey. Kind of their Lamprey coordinator there. And I work with the 4 Cryptic member tribes on lamprey issues. As you guys know, there's been continued declines of lamprey within the basin. These fish are important to the tribes, a cultural and collection source of food for the tribes. And they're concerned about the numbers. And over the past 10 or 15 years, we've worked to kind of develop alternative management and passive strategies for these fish to try to improve their numbers ultimately save them. Umatilla Tribe has been collecting fish at core facilities since about 2000. And this was in conjunction with the BPA lamprey restoration project that they had in their basin. basically to try to restore natural production within the Unitil River. And they've been doing this by outplanting adult Pacific Lampreys from these facilities, the Lower Columbia River hydroelectric facilities, and then in conjunction with these translocations, doing some research and monitoring to obtain life history information. And Unitil has primarily collected at the Dalles and John Day using both active trapping as well as salvaging of fish during winter watering and the dewatering and maintenance activities. And so this is just a quick table about their collection efforts. The main point is to get it, is that the estimated, the total estimated count at Bonneville, Umatilla has been collecting about 1% of that on average over the past 10 years or so. So they've been collecting about 1% and moving these fish into the Umatilla. And these are adult, hopefully spawning adult lamprey. And this strategy's been pretty successful for the tribe. They've done quite a bit of research and monitoring and published some results that suggest that moving these fish does increase juvenile production, larval production, recruitment in these streams. And so some of these other tribes are looking at this strategy as well, namely Nez Perce tribe, has been doing the same thing. Since 2007, their collections have been primarily salvaging efforts during winter watering and winter dewatering and maintenance. But the Yakima and Warm Springs tribes are also looking to use these types of strategies for some of their research and translocation purposes. So we've gone from one to two tribes and now to four tribes requesting to collect fish for their restoration efforts. This is just a quick figure to let you know where these tribes sit within the basin. The yellow is their current reservation boundaries, and then the light blue is the Columbia River Basin as a whole. And so the tribes, the Umatilla, they were the first ones to kind of work on this translocation stuff, but the tribes decided that they needed to have some sort of guidelines for these efforts, and so the four treaty tribes agreed on kind of some kind of an outline for future translocation efforts, including kind of an annual max, and then which is 4%. 4% of the previous 2 year estimated mean run at Bonneville Dam. So, for example, collections in 2011 would be guided by adult counts in 2009 and 2010. So, 4% of that average. And then.
Just to clarify, is that the daytime count or the total count?
That's
right
the,
now.
The way that they have it calculated, it's the daytime times two. So. So basically, an estimation of total passage.
But they're doubling it to the 16 hours of daytime.
They're doubling the.
See my point?
Yeah.
Okay. Just that's for the formula, though.
Yeah.
That's right. What they're using.
And I don't know the exact formula in my head, but it makes
roughly
sense.
That makes sense. Sure.
I assume it's all counts, like the LPS.
And yeah, and so they've been the last 2 years they've worked into those counts in as well. But previously it was just the daytime counts, but they're adding in the LPS counts, and pretty much any way a fish can get over the dam using that as their
and then doubling it
as their guideline. Yeah, and then in an attempt to try not to, and so this the 4% is the total count over all four Lower Columbia River dams. They use Bonneville as kind of their guide. But then at each dam, so John Day or the Dalles, they want to limit the amount of fish coming out of each unique dam, so they have a 10% limit at each individual facility.
So you're saying facility, is that dam, or is that one ladder versus another ladder? Or
that's per dam.
Per dam. Okay, probably should say.
So the general strategies with the, and I printed out the guidelines and I forgot to bring them with me, but basically the general strategies are transparency and numbers and objectives. So prior to each collection year, each tribe is supposed to present their plan to the CRCFIT Commission. And that's in an effort to make sure that each tribe knows what the other one is doing. And then within the guidelines are also within season management. So, for example, in July, we would look at the in-season counts and kind of adjust collection based on those counts. So if there's a lot of fish, maybe the commission would agree to more fish being collected. And if there's there's a lot less, then the commission might agree to cut those numbers down a little bit. And so currently, collections have been concentrated at the four Columbia Basin dams, namely the Dalles and John Day. This is where Nez Perce and Umatilla tribes have collected most of their fish within each year. But as you move along with more tribes wanting to collect fish and more importantly, declining adult returns, there's an increased pressure on these adult populations.
Brian?
Yeah.
Did I see up there that salvage fish don't, salvage lamprey don't contribute towards the maximum?
Yeah, so salvage fish are not included in that 4%.
And that salvage fish is fish that are salvaged at the end of the season, dewatering, and stuff like that, which could be a large number of fish.
Yeah, and it used to be more of a large number, but they've improved the dewatering and hopefully passage, and so there's less fish available.
Is that why? I'm thinking those fish would be put back in the river and still be part of the run, so why discount them from the total?
I don't know what the decision was on that. I think it's just,
it allows for more is what it does.
Yeah.
But I don't know that that's
the decision.
Well, I think the idea was that they'd rather salvage fish than have to collect fish.
Well, I understand that, but if you're going to take, if you're limiting the take out of the run for this purpose,
maybe
you should. The traps. It should be a limit on the entire run. Take part of it out of the.
Just take that back concern. For a second.
Unless you assume
in the translocation plan that the tribes have written up already, is kind of part of that document. For some of these specifics, part of the translocation plan that the tribes.
I mean, the guide. There's a two-page guide translocation guideline document. It'll be within the tribal restoration plan. Like I said, I meant to bring it here just so folks can see the actual specifics of that. I mean, it's 10 or 12 bullet points, basically, how this breaks down.
Okay. Brian?
Yeah.
Seems like the average of the 2 years is okay, but if you're in the middle of a year and
the conference,
you've got an increasing number of lamprey based on your previous 2 year average, I think I just heard you say the commission might consider allowing a larger catch, or at least they would consider it. Is that right?
And that's kind of the in-season management part is in those guidelines as well.
I guess the first thing that crosses my mind is if you've got a really good year of lamprey that are returning, why not maintain that two-year average limit on your take and allow the extra fish to continue upriver to migrate?
And that's probably a decision they might make. I think those. My guess is that that's in there mainly for lower numbers within a season. So if there's really low numbers coming through,
that I can understand.
That's my guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the decision they would make, but I think that's why they have that in there. There's some in-season check on those collections.
Okay. So allocation is pretty much dictated by QuickFic on this, the commissioner. So if you have competing interests from the tribes, who's going to say, especially the Yakima, want what's already been maybe over-allocated or close to over-allocated, then how do
so So that among tribe cooperation is a big deal, and I'm just beginning to try to get my hands on that. So that's a whole
good luck.
That's a whole other presentation. So, yeah.
Is there prioritization in the translocation guidelines to use genetics?
There's nothing mentioned in the guidelines themselves about genetics.
Do you see that as an opportunity in the future that might be explored or not?
I think it's on their collective minds. I think that we just don't know. I mean, there's so much conflicting information about that right now. I think they're going on the premise that these fish don't seem to have salmonid-like population structure, at least from some of the research that's come out. I mean, there's levels of homing they don't really know, but
there's nothing in the current results of the genetic testing that indicate there is anything but a homogeneous population.
Yeah. Right. Site fidelity.
There's no way to take and determine any particular tributary strain differences from another. Mm-hmm. Nothing.
Hopefully we have sensitive enough methods that we're not creating the ills of the past here.
Well, yeah. I mean, your concern is a good one, but there's no way to take measure of this right now. There's some development of some new types of tests, but they're not out there.
Are they? Do you see them forthcoming now in the near future at all, or do you think it's?
I think we'll have them first. If there's on the juvenile side of things, we might be able to determine base of origin for juveniles from hard parts.
Yeah.
And you could almost possibly then work backwards to determine if you can separate those genetically. So you've got one version of a separation based on hard parts and water chemistry in those subbasins. And from that, you might be able to begin to link together genetic components.
Has left the conference.
It's just a beginning.
I'd be looking for something that's not there.
Just scratching the beginning.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, there's multiple projects going on right now to try to get a handle on that, whether it's, you know, within the Willamette itself or across the Columbia River Basin. There's folks trying to pinpoint that genetic or lack of genetic structure.
As long as this keeps going on, that'll be.
And the Lamprey Technical Work Group, by the way, just completed a translocation paper that includes discussion of these guidelines and all the considerations and risks associated with translocation. So I can send you, a link.
It's available on the CUPFLA site, too, I think.
All right.
Thanks.
Are you rolling in the any collection from Willamette Falls?
That's in the guidelines, but it's the way I understand it, it's a last-ditch, it would be a last-ditch emergency collection location. But that would have to be approved by the commission as well, that decision. Let's see. So there's a limited amount of fish. There's different needs for these fish, so there's research objectives and increasing tribal needs. And so just within season, trying to figure out who's collecting what and where those fish are going is becoming trickier. And we're limited right now to the amount of available fish using the current collection strategies. And so, for example, the Umatilla, their effort for getting their fish, or it's collecting fish, has been likely due to declining numbers. It's been harder and harder for them to get fish, actively trapping these fish. And so, short-term objectives, when I say short-term, originally I was thinking this summer, but really it's more next summer, the way I'm looking at it now, is because there are some, there's quite a bit of stuff you have to go through and figuring out go through here, but would be an increased trapping effort. Ideally, some of this trapping would be done at tail race and downstream locations rather than actively collecting it at dams or within specific fishways. And then also a coordinated collection effort among the tribes and with researchers, which is something that we've been working on with the Corps. And other researchers doing Lamprey stuff. Potentially having a holding location for collected adults, and this would be some sort of infrastructure to hold fish. Collected fish would be held there, so the tribal guys wouldn't have to come down every day. They could come down every third day and collect a larger pool of fish rather than efforts each day. And then also having some sort of collection personnel there to kind of coordinate these collection activities. And I know that the Yakima tribe is working, I think, possibly have somebody lined up for this year to live near these facilities and kind of help coordinate some of these collections by the tribes.
Has joined the conference.
So like I said, most of the collections have been at John Day and the Dalles, and mainly the Umatilla has been actively trapping fish. But Bonneville would be a more prime location. But then you run into the other researchers collecting fish, so there's a lot of kind of logistical things that would need to be figured out there. And then possibly a central holding location, somewhere between the John Day and McNary, which would be kind of centrally located for the four tribes, so that they didn't have to go all the way down to Bonneville or all the way down to Dallas to collect fish. They could go to one place. And then long term, I mean, this is something that's in each, a lot of this kind of stuff is the same, but so increased trapping, collection sites, a holding location, and then this is a whole policy discussion, but some sort of funding stream designated for tribal collection purposes, specifically infrastructure as well as personnel, collection personnel. The tribes are considering or using translocation as an alternative passage. They feel like it's ensuring that at least some adults are making it into spawning tributaries, because you're basically bypassing some of these other facilities, main stem facilities, and I just listed, you know, three or four other things to consider, and a lot of these are kind of big picture things, but we want to make sure that, you know, as we move through this process, that we're engaging everybody that needs to be engaged, and doing our due diligence as far as collection protocols and access to the facilities. And I believe the Umatillas, I mean, they've been doing this for a long time, so they kind of know the ropes. But it would be important to make sure that the other tribes, this is something that they want to continue doing or are running their plans and their protocols through you folks, and make sure that we don't have any issues.
What we don't want is to have every tribe with their own trap stuck in a ladder somewhere. I mean, that's...
Yeah, and I think that's what, within tribes, that's something we need to figure out, and that's kind of that coordinated effort, so that, you know, I get the sense that they're all willing to work together with each other. I mean, you can't have four sets of tribes.
No, I'd rather have one set of traps than that collection facility you're talking about somewhere up the rivers where they come to get fish.
Right,
and
that would be the ideal situation.
So is this what
easier said than done?
I understand. They don't want to have their own trapping thing, but
sure.
Is this where that single Yakima point of contact would be the person for all the four tribes? There's someone from Yakima's who would be close to the site and kind of the point of contact or monitor?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of that right now. The way I understand it is that person would be living near the facilities and would be the one on a day-to-day basis actively managing those tribes.
For all four tribes?
At this point, yeah, okay. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, really, the way I look at it is, it's going to have to be, there's going to have to be some serious inter-tribal coordination to do this. It's going to happen anyway. So it's going to be a lot harder to do it any other way.
There'll probably be some limitations from us on that. So, impacts on Sam.
salmon, so that might force that to some degree.
Yeah. Because right now everything is just inside the thickets.
Right.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, those are obviously huge considerations. We want to limit those effects on salmon. And that's why I said that the downstream tail race stuff would be, and I know that the Corps has been thinking about this too, rather than having traps within ladders, having them downstream so they're not having this big effect.
Yeah, those are still pretty close to the exit or the entrances, so, you know, I think it's okay, but having a whole bunch of traps there, that could be an issue, and people, lots of people doing work, you can't control that as much, so.
And so that's the kind of stuff
activity that, there is sensitive.
That we're trying to think about and plan for right now. I mean, the Umatilla, they've been the ones kind of primarily using these strategies, so they know the ropes, but, you know, if we were to think of this as a bigger project rather than just one tribe, then we have to start kind of thinking about these logistics now.
Right.
So that's why we're here.
Do you guys use any of those transported fish for human consumption?
No.
Nothing? Not even the mortalities or anything like that?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
It would seem like the LPS at Bonneville would be an opportunity to do something rather than influence.
Here we go. Zip it.
Let me get out.
That's not okay.
Whoa.
Not okay.
Front seat. I got a front seat.
What were you going to say, Tim?
For this one.
Nothing.
I thought it was a good idea.
The status quo has been that the LPSs are passive structures only, not to be tampered with, essentially, other than the ones that we've been testing in the entrance area or those that terminate in the holding box. And that's one of the discussions we've been having with the tribes. If they can't meet their collection needs within, like, for example, if it take 30 traps, stringing them inside fishways or some other setup downstream of the dam that's not allowed, then we have to revisit that discussion of the LPSs. But what we've been trying to do is encourage them to find basically increased trapping effort to meet their collection needs rather than tapping into the LPSs.
Well, what do they currently use to trap?
They look like minnow traps, basically.
It's like a PVC. And that just doesn't keep up with the amount that they need, or is it too invasive?
Well, you've had declining runs and declining trapping efficiency, probably because of some of the improvements that we've been doing near the count stations. Most of the trapping locations are near, kind of in the AWS areas, kind of near the count stations, and we've been lifting picket leads. Interestingly, we've had lower trapping success both for our researchers from U of I and you know, Mary Moser and whatnot, mm-hmm. and up at John Day.
Yeah, up until a couple of years ago, I mean, the Umatilla were able to get fish really quick.
Mm-hmm.
So you get their allocation, like...
Just dewatering.
Well, just dewatering and then just minimal trapping. But at least last year, I mean, they were going down every day to collect one or two fish at a time. So that costs a lot.
Another thought too is like inside AWS systems, because the big question was how many lamprey are actually going through grading into AWS. And so I know at the Dalles there wasn't an outside of the Dalles, so inside that system. But that would give us an idea how many are actually going into the AWS system.
Okay. Yeah, Brian, on this, there was some handout material in the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And I just a question there on the first page of that stuff where it talks individually about the plan that each tribe has for this upcoming year.
Right.
So both under the Umatilla and the Nez Perce section, the first line says total number requested 200, and then right under that it says collect up to 500. I'm confused. So.
Yeah, so that 500 is kind of this goal every year, and I don't know where that number comes. So
Well, I guess I was just trying to figure out what that means. They're requesting 200, but they'll take up to 500 if they're available?
Well, the 200 is probably in relation to active collection rather than salvage. So, you know, if you looked at the guidelines for translocation, salvage, you know, if they could actively collect that 200 and then get 300 via salvage, then that would get that 500.
That 500 is a core limit.
Great. Okay, it was just unclear what that.
And the 226 and the 200, et cetera, is based on that criteria of the 4%.
2-year average, which has been about 20,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And as you know, the core and the tribal folks have discussed this a little bit, and you know, with our researchers, U of I and whatnot. Because of the poor trapping success, no one's really met their targets for the last several years. So just like U of I says, this year they would like to tag up to, I don't even remember what it is off the top of my head, but you know, 500, you know, fish with half duplex tags. They're not going to catch 500 fish unless we have a huge.
Which we will.
We will. We'll have a huge line.
So the way this reads then is the requested number is 200. But the goal would be to have 500 with those extra numbers coming from the salvage operation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, from my understanding, that's their kind of goal. They want to get as much as they can.
They never trapped until the past 4 years or so.
Right.
They used to be quite a bit salvage, but.
Yeah, well, I was just trying to make sure I understood.
These are salvaging are pretty much overrated.
Okay.
Any other questions?
What's the punchline here?
I don't know.
I guess the punchline would be, you know, we just want to have this information out there and be transparent about it. And then as we move through our process of doing these efforts, make sure that we have, we're coordinating properly with you folks and just make sure that it's out there.
Yeah. The keys.
And that we're going through the proper channels to do these types of collections.
For this group, we're really going to be most concerned about putting traps in certain locations, and you know that'll be the issue, and it affects on passage of a salmon. So, you know, as far as the translocation and the biology and ethics associated with that are somebody else's issue.
Yeah.
His, but
it's also Brian's.
But yeah, so you know, specifically what this group needs to see is things like trap locations or numbers of traps or intended impacts of activities, things like that.
And from my understanding, Umatilla's been pretty good about going through these channels.
Oh, yeah.
So I mean, a lot of the other three tribes are kind of using those guys as a guide.
It just kind of scares me. You know, we are all okay with Umatilla or whatever the requests we've gotten so far have been okay. That's fine. But if it's four times that, could get to be an issue.
Yeah.
Unless it's coordinated.
Exactly. So, you know, as Brian mentioned at the beginning, when he says short term, he was thinking next year, realizing that there's a lot of factors here in terms of identifying potential trapping locations and identifying areas where you could hold an increased number of fish over what we're already doing with U of I and
locations.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Yeah, as I see it, I think FPOM's role is going to continue to be, you know, if they identify trapping locations, working with the projects, you know, running potential trapping operations through this group, and same thing goes for holding locations and criteria for you know, how long you can hold fish and temperature issues. And
And who's responsible.
And who's responsible.
If they're on the project or off the project, if you're talking about somewhere like Arlington or whatever, then it's not an issue, but here.
Any other questions, comments? Well, thank you, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How are we doing?
Yeah, lunchtime.
Yeah, I think we should break maybe. How about 30 minutes? Would that be cool?
That's fine.
We all throw and grab something and come back.
Yeah,
like quarter to one.
Yeah. Even if you bring it up here and finish eating up here.